far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, join us for our Right Stuff Banquet episode of All Sorts of Gundam Involved.
Sitting for the principality of Zeon, killing all these rappers with a flow coded than Freon. Yeah, I'm prime time with it like Dion. Richie trying to shine like that Beam Saber neon. Yeah, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. These rappers taking shots, what you thought I wouldn't notice you. Them shots you taking, I suggest you focus on them photo shoots before you make me hop in that Zaku mobile suit. Find out where you are and charge with max velocity and spit a large amount of bars with shards ferocity. Richie kill them all, I don't need to drop a colony. Illest of them all with a new type philosophy. Running through my veins, so I'm yelling Seek Zeon. If you didn't know my name, turn your TV on. Richie in the heat of the battle causing fatality. So pay attention while I represent my principality. Came from the bottom, now I made it to the top. New type flow, I'm the hottest on the block. Somebody tell these haters that I'm never gonna stop. Never till I kill them all like a colony drop. I'm yelling
yes,
out
Seek Zeon. Calls me up. Oh, I don't allow access. Dadgummit. Stupid computer. Alright. Now let's configure settings. Hang on. No, that's not what I wanted. Alright, now say something else.
Alright. JP's saying Nintendo confirms no Netflix on the Switch. Is it working?
Yeah, I just had to set the right levels. I go through this every single time I boot up OBS to record these episodes. And when I get on Slack, it doesn't save what my settings were last time in terms of like me using a USB headset. Like it forgets all that crap.
There's no way to tell it to save settings.
Well, the OSB program I've got, every time I boot it up, there's always this window that's like, hey, this OBS has crashed, but then it hasn't because it's still working somehow. So, I don't know. It's still recording, so we're doing good. It does this every time. Every time I stream, or I record stuff from Toonami. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Alright. Technical issues aside, getting ready to do our first recording since basically the end of last month when we talked about Star Wars.
Yeah, we did one, I think, on New Year's Eve. Or somewhere around there where we the Rogue One. Or at least it was released on New Year's Eve. It was recorded a few days earlier.
Yeah, I released it on New Year's Day, but like we recorded it like that Tuesday or something, because you saw it in theaters and that's when you found out Carrie Fisher died.
Right, that day I think that we recorded is the day that I saw it and the day that she died.
Yeah.
And then the next day her mother died.
Yeah, that was kind of something that was like bound to happen after I saw like.
I saw that you added that in there, your comments about that.
Yeah, that was like the beginning of the episode. Like, hey, a quick heads up: Carrie Fisher's mom died because she just couldn't handle her baby dying before her, and who could blame her? So.
Mm-hmm. And she was like 85.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, she 85. I mean, it sucks that she went out that way, but. I mean, living to, like, 80-something, I'd say you did pretty good in life. And then you got, like, the Bush family, like, you know, W's daddy and his mom were both in the hospital recently. And now they're,
also
like...
also dying of grief because Jeb was not inaugurated.
I don't know. On the news, it was, like, they asked, like, H. Bush, and he's just like, I need to get out of this hospital. I got Super Bowl plans, basically.
I remember a few years ago, like, stories about him skydiving and stuff, so I guess he was still pretty active until fairly recently, but then there's, like, been a series of stories about his health being really bad. And
yeah.
I'm surprised that him and Jimmy Carter survived to see Trump inaugurated, since I thought they were both on the verge of death. They're, like, in the 90s.
Yeah, only, like, out of that era going back early as Carter, only Reagan, and Reagan's wife wasn't there either. But
because Reagan is dead.
Yeah, both of them are. But, like, it's just amazing in how old they are. Like, Jimmy Carter is basically a pastor in some church in Georgia. So that's
but one of the stark messages. I don't know who did it. Maybe Daft in the Slack chat is at least Nancy Reagan is still alive, which you said like a month before she died or something.
Oh crap!
And then now there's the second starred message, which is, oh, maybe it's a pinned message, but JT kept saying, "Are they saying fist on?"
I didn't mean.
And I had to correct him and say, so, "No, that's fist."
I didn't mean to star that because I was just trying to like freaking get. I was trying to respond, and then it happened to favorite it for some reason. I was trying to add a reaction to it. And then I just like, well, this is actually funnier if it's starred, because then we can all see it. Fist, not vist, or whatever. Or it's like, JT, it's fist, not fist.
Because he kept saying it over and over, and I was like, okay, I just gotta correct him, you know.
There's no point in correcting JT. Otherwise, he'll just keep saying it. He's just gonna believe what he wants.
Yeah, he's probably gonna keep saying it anyway. Like, there was a character on Blue Exorcist called Yu-Gi-Oh, and he kept calling him Yu-Gi-Oh for the entire series.
Is he going to defeat the demons with his cards? Throw your cards down, Yu-Gi-Oh!
Is it time to duel? That's what the only party knows about Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that line?
Oh, man. Gosh, JT. Honestly, like, I haven't even really, like, put a lot of thought into getting new blood on the chat. AKA finding reasons to kick JT out. But,
it's Daft's favorite thing to propose all the time.
Yeah. But, I mean, stuff like that, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess we'll keep JT around longer.
He is at least entertaining, and he brings that activity to the chat, even if it's ridiculous.
Even if I don't read 98% of what he posts up, which, again, is just mostly videos of Dragon Ball Z OSTs from Falcon War.
You mean the Great Saiyan Man isn't actually gonna rap? That wasn't in the Japanese version? I'm so shocked. Because he thought that like the 1990s dub of Dragon Ball Z was perfectly accurate, apparently.
It's the most accurate translation.
You mean Krillin didn't really say Mondo Cool in Japanese? Although they are keeping that actually in the final chapter's dub for the part where they had like the lineup promo during the 11:30 super, and it showed like the Cell Games reenactment, and they had the Team 4 Star people in there, and they were like spouting off memes, and like the Krillin character was saying Mondo Cool, and then they had Vegeta saying it's over 9,000. So I guess even Kai is not a perfectly accurate dub. They added in some jokes here and there.
Well, yeah, this is Dragon Ball Z dub. Like, we have to add in funny stuff, so.
And I think that there was a part where, in the Cell Game saga, Hercule, or Mr. Satan, or whatever you want to call him, he was talking about how he set it to DVR his appearance where he defeats Cell. And in the original, he said he was going to put it on Betamax or VHS or something.
Well. You ready to get this started on what we're really here to talk about?
You mean the real adventures of Mike Pence?
Well, yeah, more so that than the Gundam stuff we've been getting from Right Stuff, which I've been talking about for, 4 months now that we've been trying to do?
Yeah, we've got many, many DVDs and Blu-rays of Gundam from them that we'll talk about.
Yeah, so we've been getting a lot of Gundam stuff in the past, all of 2016, that, you know, we've been meaning to cover, and we just haven't because there's just so much other stuff to cover. But fear not, Right Stuff, we're here to deliver at the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, and we're going to own up to that at the start of the new year, in our first recording of 2017,
which
I'm probably just going to put this out and edit it next Sunday or something, or next Monday, I don't know, I'll figure it out. But it will be before the end of this month.
And the main thing we were going to talk about was G-Reco, but also we saw a few episodes of Build Fighters Try.
Yeah, and then we can talk about
Like the video quality and the special features and the other stuff, since we've already reviewed the actual shows.
And we can do like a quickie review of Iron Blooded Orphans, but That would require me to remember what happened in that show that didn't put me to sleep. So that's gonna be a doozy to get through.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that first before we get to the right stuff?
Iron Boarded Orphans. Sure, why not? Quick introduction.
I saw the first two episodes or so on, like, subbed when it first came out, and I had to drop it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Konami made me watch the rest of it.
Yeah, that's what I did like 2 or 3 years ago when I was on Daisuke for like free, and and like I was like, well, maybe I'll get around to this, and I never did. And then it was like on Toonami, and I was like, well, oh well, might as well.
I mean, it's Gundam on Toonami, right? So it was cool to see it, even though so much of it was so boring.
You know what? I gotta do something real quick. We gotta do introductions.
I'm
Dustin of the Anime Investor Podcast, and with me is my co-host John.
Yes.
Look how on it we are on and talking about ourselves. And
it only took us 10 minutes.
So in case people never heard this podcast before and they happen to just start with this episode of all 106 episodes we've done-ish, I think, whatever the number is, and I don't have Chrome pulled up, so we'll just guesstimate it.
And Cold Kids Club. It's probably like 300 episodes we've done or something. Maybe 200.
It's really close to 200, actually. I would bank on more 200, or very close to it.
Because this one is like lasted longer than the other two combined, maybe.
In terms of length and numbers.
Yeah, I mean, we put out like more frequently with the first two podcasts because we had one out every week back then.
Yeah,
but this one we have more episodes, even though it's been released less frequently.
The thing is, like, I'm in university, so, like, you know, my new semester started. It's pretty tough. I get Spanish every day and my other classes that require a lot of my time. And I worked a bunch during winter break, so, like, I just got a lot of stuff going on. And, I mean, honestly, in my mind, I was thinking, like, well, maybe we ought to just do once a month for, like, 2017. But I figured, like, if we tried to do our best to keep it at 2 a month, then we're doing pretty good more so than, like, other podcasts out there, probably. Like, I understand, like, the more we get out per month, the more listeners we're supposed to get or whatever. But that hasn't really changed. And, I mean, it's really based on the comfortability of, like, when we can get stuff out at our leisure and still have enough content. I mean, we freaking do 2-hour episodes on average. That's a lot of content for twice a month, I'd say.
And some are even longer. Like, I think the previous one was almost like 3 hours or something.
Yeah, something like that, and that was mostly like just...
When Daft gets on, he won't shut up, you know? Like, he wants the call to go on all night.
Yeah, Daft is like the audio version of JT talking. Except, I actually have more interest in what Daft has to say.
He's
going to
be offended when he listens to this.
But the thing is, he'll never listen to this. So he'll be like, how dare you compare me to JT? I'm like, well, in Bizarro world, that's actually a good trait.
You can't manage to read what JT says, and you can't manage to listen to what Daft says.
No, those two have equal things. Well, the thing was, like, I was really interested in what Daft had to say because, like, he went to the Hanna-Barbera Museum, and I wanted him to talk about that. And then him and Viku talked about that book about the guy who wrote about Tommy Wiseau, which sounded pretty interesting.
Putting in the room.
Yeah. But anyways, okay. I'm going to let you... What were your impressions on Iron Boarded Orphans?
Well, two-thirds of the episodes or something don't even have battles in it. And, you know, I don't mind a show that has more politics in it. And a lot of mecha shows, of course, do have politics. I mean, I'm a political science major, so I don't care if there's politics in it, whatever. But... the problem with it is the politics of it are so simple. It's just like the Spacenoids need independence, and they're treating this like some novel, really innovative concept here. The Martians are being exploited by the Earth, and then they spend like 2/3 of the show on that when they're really adding nothing new. And then you need something to visually keep you stimulated when it's just some old guy with a beard talking to you know, the girl about, you know, is he going to be on their side or not or whatever, Mocked and I. And it's just, you know, it goes on and on and on, and it'll be like 2 or 3 scenes an episode, and each scene is 5 times longer than it needs to be. And so much of it is them standing around on a spaceship talking about boring stuff or, you know, them learning how to write from
girl.
It's so much boring stuff like that. And, you know, I would say if you want like a good political mecha show, watch Dogrum or something like that. Don't watch Iron Blooded Orphans.
Like, honestly, to best memory, like, okay, the first couple episodes were pretty good. It was like, oh, these oppressed kids and they're getting a chance at freedom, getting off freaking Mars. And then, you know, you bring some other people in that like have to make it political. And like, honestly, like the first, I guess half of the series, like sort of more stuff happens. And then once they get near the Earth, it's like, we time for diplomacy talk. We don't need mobile suit battles at all. And I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. Like,
there were like five episodes in space where it was just some guy with a harem. And it was just them, like, waifus.
Yeah, so we got, like, Middle Eastern-looking pimp dude with all his, you know, bitches, his waifus. And they're on one ship. And then he got the other ship with all, like, the soldier work kids or whatever. And they're learning how to read and write because it's, like, an after-school special thing and, like, education's important, and not mobile suit battles at all. Man, I just know, like, as soon as they landed on Earth and they met the old guy, it was like, now it's C-SPAN Gundam, the anime. And I'm like, F this. But,
yeah.
I can't really,
it's like is he gonna betray them or is he not? Did he tip these people off about where they're going? And
Some of the stuff wasn't even clear. Like, the whole thing about, really, like, Seabiscuit's brother or whatever, like, it was like, he ratted him out. And I'm like, it was like they had some talk with him, like, talking to other people. And then, like, oh, you hear that he sold his brother out. And then, but we never knew the fate of his brother. And then Seabiscuit died. So, like, whatever. There goes that plot. And
it's something like he was working for the rebellion, but he didn't want the rebellion to rebel. And he was like, why? You know? It's like some rich guy is paying him to do this, but then he doesn't really want him to actually have them start rebelling because then they're going to fight back against the rebellion. It's like, this doesn't really make any sense.
They didn't read the Idiot's Guide to Rebellion book. Or this must be the President Obama way to try to start a rebellion, where, like, he wants a rebellion, he just doesn't know how to start one. And then it sits in Congress for a while.
He wants a rebellion, and then, nothing happens. We're actually gonna die?
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh.
But this is not an Obama-era podcast, is it?
No, we are in the new world freed Neo, not Nazi, Trump era.
Yeah,
that's what liberals would call it. Yeah, I'm just gonna call it the Zeon era. That makes me feel better. You can't say it's Nazi because the people who call Nazis don't know Gundam. So then I can get away with saying, like, oh, this is the Neo Zeon era. And we'll be seeing the Zeon flag above Washington soon. And then people are gonna be like, what's that?
You see what I posted earlier in the chat annoying? Where the press secretary of Trump was, posing with a Gundam at a Gundam.
Yeah. That was like, what, a couple years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, 2013. So the start of the second Obama term, but interesting that we have Otaku here as a press secretary. It really is the Zeon age. A Gundam fan even.
I always knew one of our kind would make it into politics someday, John. And I'm glad it was that guy. Someday we're gonna get a lot of emails from angry liberals about this podcast. I'm just waiting. It's not a matter of if, but when.
The funny thing is we've been saying that, like, at the end of every episode, like, someone's gonna get mad about this one, and then it never happens.
Yeah, there's so much ammunition against us going back, like, 3 years, and everything's like, oh god, we're gonna get so many angry emails. Nothing ever happens. So then I feel like I had the liberty to just, like, alright, let's see how worse I can possibly get as a human being on this podcast.
Say some Nazism, protesters or something, and then we'll get some. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll save all that political talk towards the end like we usually do. And then if people really cared, they would just, like, hear this part and skip all that because we may offend them. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just being straight up. Straight up. All right. I don't know what else to say about Iron-Blooded Orphans. I mean,
like, I guess the action scenes were okay, but there just weren't enough of them for it to be worthwhile. And there is going to be another season, but I don't know when they're going to air it. I guess right after they finish airing the
Unicorn. It may be like 2018. I'm expecting maybe 2018 is when the next season will probably be dubbed, either late this year or early next year is what I'm thinking.
Because it's airing in Japan right now, and I don't really know how long it's going to take them to dub it. That's true. Maybe they could air something else in between Unicorn. Like, they could go and air 00, since they've aired other stuff that Anna Monday has aired, like Gurren Lagann.
Yeah, well, speaking of, like, since you mentioned Unicorn, so the first time in a very, very long time, and this is going to relate it, that we finally got another Universal Century show on Toonami. Mm-hmm. And that's the TV version of Gundam Unicorn. And, like, they've been splitting up the episodes, and I think the pacing on it and splitting up the OVAs is pretty good so far.
Yeah, I don't think there's been anything you see since, before Seed premiered. Because back on SVS, they had, like, 0080 and 0083, I think. But SVS ended in early 2004, and, you know, they had Charge Counterattack and,
well,
I think, like, New Year's Eve 2003.
Yeah, Char's Counterattack play New Year's Eve 2003, because I remember I was at a friend's house watching a bit of that. But I already had the DVD to it by then. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, honestly, like, 0083 possibly might have been the last time a UC show was on Cartoon Network, and that's 2003 also, or OVA. So yeah, maybe Char's Counterattack was the last UC thing, because then after that, like, they never really, like, aired 0080, like in 2003 or 2004 or whatever, it just went straight to Gundam Seed. Mm-hmm. And then there hasn't been a UC show on Cartoon Network since then. So this has been like 13 years or so, right into 14 years.
Right, and Seed was the last Gundam show on there, period, until recently.
Yeah.
And Seed only lasted 6 months and was gone by fall of 2004.
Well, they aired everything once and that was it.
Right, and then they moved it to Friday night, and I think they may have re-aired it there once, but, you know, as for Toonami, they haven't had it on there since 2004, so, you know, it was a dozen years where there was no Gundam on TV, to blow on, and a Monday, but.
Yeah, that didn't happen until, like, 4 years later, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then nothing after that for quite a while, and, you know, people thought it would never happen, because after 00 aired, there was the whole issue with Bandai going out of business here and not being able to release any more anime.
Yeah, that kind of was like the big, like, nail in the coffin. Like, okay, Gundam is officially dead in America. Bandai of America doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Other than that episode of Wing that they aired on April Fool's Day when the Toonami came back.
Oh, yeah. Dang it, I meant to mute when I sneezed.
That's your reaction to Wing, apparently. Although, didn't you say you prefer Wing to Iron Blood?
Honestly, thinking back on it, like, when I think of Wing, I'm like, I know, like, for a long time I hated Wing because I was, like, super diehard UC fan. And then my heart's kind of softened on Wing. Because I understand it's not a great show, but at the same time, like, it's something I need to go back and rewatch it. And I know we're going to get, like, the DVDs or Blu-rays from Right Stuff in the mail. So, like, that would be my chance to just sit down and rewatch all of Wing that time.
Right.
And just have some fresh eyes on it after not seeing the entire series since 2000. And
yeah, I think I saw it last in 2006 because I was renting it at a store on VHS. And, it's time to see it again because it's been a while. And I think that there's a lot of it that would make more sense on second viewing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last time
it is kind of complicated.
I think the last time I saw, like, the first 15 episodes was probably over a decade ago. And a buddy of mine handed me his VHS tapes because he's like, I don't want these anymore. And I'm like, well, yeah, I totally hate Wing. And I'm just, like, taking them off his hands. And I'm like, actually, I kind of want to see Wing again. And then I saw it, and it seemed like it made more sense.
You don't have to hate everything that's not UC if you're a UC fan. You know, it's not like either or. You can love all the different shows.
Yeah, it's a matter of quality over timeline, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, I guess with G-Reco, which I guess we're going to probably talk about now, it's not clear if it's considered UC or not. They have, like, a new timeline name for it, right? But they talk about UC like it happened in the past.
And they have, like, replicas of the mechs from the Universal Century era.
I think it's kind of, like, set after F-91 and Victory sometime in, like, the distant future of UC.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what they call this century. Do you?
It's not Cosmo Era, right? Maybe that's it. I don't know. What's the back of the? Let me check the back of the Blu-ray here. Hold on. All right. And Red Guild Century is what they called it. Okay, so it says
what century?
It says, the turbulent era known as the Universal Century has ended. Now, mankind looks forward prosperity and peace, or towards prosperity and peace. And the new era known as Regild Century, or RC. It's R-E-G-I-L-D, so I guess it's Regild. And it's got like a capital system. You know, the army that they keep, like, fighting against, what is, like, I keep wanting to think it's the Americans, but it's saying, like, Amerians.
Yeah, it's like, like in Code Geass, where they say Britannia instead of, you know, Britain or whatever, like they just slightly change it to make it, you know, not quite the name of.
But, I mean, I'll talk about, like, I mean, you saw the whole series, because, like, I don't know if you want to sum that up, but, like, I'll just say my bit on it, that, like, I remember seeing the fan subs to G-Reco, like, you know, a couple years ago, and it didn't really make sense to me then, and then watching the subs from Right Stuff, it kind of sort of made sense, but it's still just a hard show to follow. And honestly, like, I felt like most of the dialogue is people apologizing to each other all the time. Like, there was a bit where I felt like the whole episode was like, I bumped into you, I'm sorry, I'm puking in this bag, I'm sorry, we're going into space, I'm sorry. Look, the fish crapped in the little bowl, I'm sorry. And I was like, God, stop being Japanese! I was like, gosh, I just want to check out so bad on the show. But anyways, like, I want your thoughts on G-Reco and what you thought of how the whole thing ended. I guess if you want to spoil things, fine, but I mean.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if I could even summarize the plot, because like you, I had a hard time following it at times. So I guess to give like a basic summary, it starts out with the main character is at some area where there's some cheerleaders and there's some pirates that show up, and
yeah,
he falls in love with one of the pirates, and then one of the cheerleaders follows him along, and then there's this retarded girl that's got a pet fish and she's hanging around for some reason.
All right, answer me this. Does she become unretarded?
Yes.
Okay.
Episode 13 or so.
Okay, well, don't tell me.
I don't know how.
I will find that out on my own when I pop in the next.
It's like they go to somewhere, and then she's not retarded anymore, and it's just like, oh, okay.
What?
They don't really explain.
Special
how.
Olympics or something? For robots?
No, no, it just happens. I don't know why, but yeah, she's the first half of the show. She's just like got this fish, and she's like, look, the fish pooped. And she keeps saying, choo-choo me, because that's what she called the fish. And she just, that's like 90% of her dialogue.
And screaming, because they're like, oh, we don't know what's wrong with her. It's like she's connected with the mobile suit. Chuck her overboard!
Yeah, and then there's this pink-haired girl that's hanging around that is, got the slingshot, and she's always, having to look after the retarded girl.
Oh, yeah.
And she's got to fill the boots of Frau Bo, I guess, you know, of being the mother of the ship.
Oh, that's a good observation.
Except for in this case, it's a retarded person instead of a child.
Well, now look at it this way from Double Zeta. Frau Bo still looked after Camille, even though after he got his brain fried from Scirocco.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the case where Camille is this girl, except female Camille is obsessed with a fish pooping in a glass jar. That, when you look at it from that perspective, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Well, what did you think of the mobile suit designs in this? Because, like, honestly, they come up with the goofiest designs. And speaking of, like, the R word, retarded, I don't understand those mobile suits that look like light bright televisions. Or, like, what was it? Simon Says. Yeah, it's the Simon Says toys, but it's like, man, how do you make a face with this, Tomino? No, just shove it in a TV and then put it on a robot. And then that's what they did. It looks so stupid. Like, I'm assuming there's probably model kits for this thing. I will never ever get one. And, oh God, help me if I ever do or feel like I should. But like, even like the G Reco, like I guess for me it's just like these new Gundam shows. I just don't care about the Gundam designs as much. Like,
what do you think of the designs in Iron Blooded?
I can't groove with it. It's like it's trying to be the mech designs from, I don't know, part Armored Core or Front Mission, and then like partly the mech designs from Five Star Stories. Like Nagano worked on that show, but I highly doubt it. It's like they brought in the mech designer from Armored Core and like was like, "Hey, have a field day. You're working for Gundam now." That's kind of how I felt with Iron Blood Orphans.
Kind of opposites. Like Iron Blooded Orphans designs are maybe a little too complicated, but this ones are kind of like too simple.
Yeah, Iron Blooded Orphans is like realistic tech fantasy of like how to make mobile suits. Kind of like they've got like those like little hover boxy looking mobile suits with like they got small gun turrets on them, which is more feasible. Like really, that's like if we're gonna make, you know, armored suits, like that would be the way to go practically. Mm-hmm. But I just can't get into the Gundam's design in Iron Blooded Orphans. It just looks too ugly for me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, and G Reco is just like, it's like kind of cool, but like I just can't get into it. It's just,
I think Tomino was kind of just having fun with the recent shows, like Trinay and G Reco. He just does his own thing, and
I mean,
even though the designs are ridiculous, those are unique and memorable.
Chief Raku at least looked funner to watch than Iron Blooded Orphans, and like everything was really colorful. Everything kind of looked like it was sort of organic looking. Like, it kind of did remind me more of Turne Gundam in a sense, where it's like, okay, you know, these are goofy looking mobile suit designs, but like they're fun looking. They're like they're not that menacing or that technical or, you know, hard sci-fi look. It's just kind of like, you know, whatever. This can pass for like a kid show kind of thing. Like, it's something, like, you can make, like, clunky resin toys from, like, the 80s out of G-Reco. And then, like, those would sell pretty good and people would collect them. That's kind of reminds me of. But, like, I'm just afraid, like, if I get a model kit for, like, Iron Blooded Orphans, like, it'll take, like, forever to glue every single little piece on it. I feel like it's just, they look way too technical than they should be. And, I don't know, man. It kind of, you know, honestly, the mechs in Iron Blooded Orphans kind of reminds me of how the mechs looked in Code Geass. Weren't they all, like, pointy and angular looking?
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't really seen it in a long time, but...
Yeah.
But not since it was first on Adult Swim, and I only saw the first quarter of it. I should go back and watch it sometime.
I never seen, like, a complete episode of Code Geass. I would always flip to it and then realize, oh, it's Code Geass. I don't care. And then I would just turn it off or like, oh, I guess I'll just wait 20 minutes until my other show comes on or Aqua Teen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was not that interesting when I first saw it. I want to give it another chance sometime, but yeah. Anyway, I guess with G-Reco, I kind of like the designs even though they're ridiculous because it's just a fun show to look at.
Yeah.
And each episode does have a lot of action in it and a lot more humor, I think, than Iron Blooded Orphans, even though it's kind of just like the fish pooped, you know, that's kind of stupid, but at least it doesn't take itself as seriously, I guess, as Iron Blooded Orphans. But you know, even though, I mean, the shows are very opposite,
mm-hmm.
even though Iron Blooded Orphans is like overloads on the politics, which G-Reco, it's kind of there, but it's not really explained. And so people are always switching sides, but you don't know what each side believes in or
Yeah.
Like, who is the main character really fighting for? I mean, I guess he goes over to fight with the pirates, but what do the pirates really want?
Well, I thought the pirates were for the American army or whatever. And I wasn't too clear on that. It's like, okay, who's fighting who now? And they're, like, going to space, and then... I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's like he thinks that the pirate girl is being mistreated because he likes her.
Uh-huh.
And then he saves her, and then I think he goes over to the pirate side just because he has a crush on the girl.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, the cheerleader girl and the retarded girl tag along, and I don't understand why. But they're there, and I think, I guess maybe because they like the main character and they just want to be part of his harem or something. I don't know. But yeah, like he's the main character girl. She's always like, oh, he has a crush on the, the pirate girl. But, the pirate girl doesn't really like him because he,
he killed
her mentor or whatever.
Boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
Boyfriend.
The other pirate guy.
Yeah.
But then, like, right after killing that guy, he, like, switched over to that guy's side, which I found weird.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get, like, why did he do that? It seems like just because he likes the pirate girl. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff about it that is kind of confusing. I guess the motivation of the character is pretty simple, and then it's just lost. But then after a while, it seems more like he likes the... Well, I guess I can spoil this, huh? It seems more like he likes the retarded girl after she gets her mind back.
Oh, once he realized, like, she's not so retarded, and she's mm-hmm. actually pretty cool, and I should probably dig her.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the the Macross effect where, like, Rick Hunter, Hikaru, is all over Minmay, and mm-hmm. then he finds that, like, Misa is really, like, the best girl for him. And he goes over mm-hmm. her and ditches Minmay.
Yeah, and then, like, that girl is... The pink girl is, like, jealous the whole time of, like, whoever he likes. But well, she's Hank's rap anyway, but though she must yeah. realize he doesn't really like
her. She's fifth wheel material.
And she doesn't really do anything particularly useful in the whole show, but, you know, that's a female in a Tamino show for you.
Yeah.
They tend to just be eye candy.
Well,
but I guess that is
eye candy to a certain demographic, I'm assuming.
Right. The demographic that watches Mecha Chefs. Which is, I guess,
there
like,
you go. Okay. So, let's see what we got here. Okay. We got some Blu-rays.
You want to talk about Try?
Yeah, we can talk about Bill Fighters.
I haven't seen the original Build Fighters. I know that you and,
Me and John.
Who else.
I mean, Josh
maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about Build Fighters, the first series, a couple years ago. And right. We got a review of that.
Has a dub on it, which we didn't see.
I had the dub on for Build Fighters Try, but apparently,
Right, we saw the dub for Try, but not for the original.
Yeah, I'm assuming it might be the same people, I don't know.
Probably. I mean, at least for... Isn't Romerall in both?
Yeah, Romerall's in both, but I don't know if he sounds Texan, redneck Texan in the original Bill Fighters or not.
They're both dubbed by the Asians, like Filipinos or something. I don't know where it's dubbed, but somewhere in...
Yeah.
It's like dubbed for Toonami Asia.
I honestly, like, I know it's not the best dub in the entire freaking world, but, like, I happen to really, like, I have the dub on for Bill Fighters Try, and I'm like, this could totally work on, like, a 4Kids block or something. Like, it's actually not that bad. And, like, I kind of dig it. And, like, I enjoy
it's
the
pretty,
dub.
It's pretty, like, child-friendly dub, but I don't think yeah. that the show itself is... in any way unfriendly to children, because yeah, it is, after all, ultra toy commercially, and it's not
yeah.
like it has any of the substance of a regular Gundam show.
Like, you don't freaking need, like, all this unnecessary swearing for characters and Build Fighters Try, because it's definitely made to sell toys, therefore kids are going to mostly watch it. So, like, that would make sense to have it kid-friendly. And, like, for me watching it, it's like, I don't have to read subtitles, I can just listen to it and just kind of just enjoy the animation of like them playing the game for, but their gunpla or whatever.
It is interesting that Toonami Asia has the budget to commission dubs like this, and also like the Dragon Ball Super dub. I suppose they do this for Super because of, you know, the Funimation dub being too, you know, too much swearing in it, and Master Roshi is perverted in it and everything. But they changed it to have, at the end, instead of Master Roshi wanting to use the money to buy dirty DVDs, he wants to use it to pay off his gambling debts. So I guess that they thought that gambling is more child-friendly than pornography. Whereas in the U.S., they would have changed it to, like, jeez, I don't even know.
Beer or something?
No, they would remove that, too.
Master Roshi needs to go to the dentist to pay off all the candy he eats in his mouth. So that would be the kid's version.
My wig.
That would be it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, they've got a different dub there, and I guess they commission dubs also for, as well as the Build Players shows, they dubbed Gundam Age, too, which has not been released here yet. I saw the first episode of their dub of Age, and yeah, I think these dubs are pretty poorly acted, but it's entertaining to watch, even though the delivery is really stilted, and I think they must be paying these guys in peanuts, but, you know, it's still pretty entertaining. I really enjoy bad dubs. That's to me, that's more entertaining than watching a good dub, because it's hilarious to see some of the stuff that actually gets professionally released.
I mean, honestly, the only cheesy thing about it is when Mr. Rowell talks, because they put, like, someone with, like, a Texan accent, or trying to be Texan, and, like, it's funny and it works, even though it's really stupid, but...
I don't know if it's maybe a Hong Kong dub, but, like, the main character, the boy one, he has, like, this barely suppressed British accent, where it's like, I don't know if he's got a British accent naturally, but he's trying to sound American or what, but... His voice just sounds like a little kid trying to put on a different accent or something. It sounds really goofy to me.
I mean, I didn't really pick up on that, but I was just kind of like, man, whatever. I'm digging this show.
Uh-huh.
So you
like the first three episodes of it?
Yeah, I do actually. Like, I remember seeing the first episode subbed. And I was like, well, I don't know about this. And then I saw the first three dubbed, and I was like, okay, actually, I can get into the show when I can get back into it.
So the basic plot of it is just that there's these kids that have a club, and I guess that this is the same club from the previous show, but different characters. Is that right?
Well, there wasn't a club from the previous show. It was more like this club started, because they mentioned about the Gunpla champion, Seiya Ori or whatever. And I guess, like, the students, like, he might have founded the Build Fighters Club when he won the National Gunpla Tournament from the original series. And so now this is, like, a few years later, and this club's, like, struggling to, you know, keep on going because, like, members left to go join a model building club. And that's, like, where, like, the really nerdy guy tries battling against the girl. And then they eventually get their members, and they got three people so they can form a team. And, you know, it's this whole thing of like, oh, models are more about building and the art, you know, artistry of putting it together and the craftsmanship. And it's like, well, you know, gunpla fighting is like, you're applying what you know, the effort of putting into your gunpla to make it better so then it can go against combat so that there's more to gunpla than just building it and having it sit there when it has all this like unhidden potential. And that's kind of like, well, the whole purpose of the build fighting tournament thing happens. Because in the first one, like, they had, like, this technology that's built into the gunpla pieces that makes it articulate and move in the game. And there was a plot thing where they're trying to exploit it, or it's alien technology or something like that. I think that's what I remember. Anyways, that's not important. But, isn't that plot in the original series like
the main character is, they refer to him as being a new type at one point, which I found funny, the concept of a new type at building models. Like, they take it kind of seriously, like, well, his martial arts training enables him to be really good at fighting with these models, and he must have some sort of new type powers that makes them so powerful. I just find it ridiculous how seriously they're taking the models. It's kind of the same reason I find LBX entertaining, is because they treat these models like they're a matter of life and death, where they're like models taking over cities and stuff in LBX, and I guess they didn't go quite this far in this show, where it's more like a standard kind of school club thing, where one group of students wants to shut down the other group of students, and like the sort of stuff in Magic Users Club, where the comic book club wants to shut down the magic club, and that sort of thing, but... Yeah, it's very much not a high school show, John, where it's all about clubs.
John, to be fair, this is way more entertaining than Magic Users Club.
I guess it does have more action than that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I've been enjoying Build Fighters Try from what I've seen so far.
I guess the difference between the sorts of dubs of these is that Magic Users Club is sort of like a knowingly goofy and bad dub, whereas in this one, I don't know if they are just like just really bad at acting or what, but yeah, I guess Ron Baral, maybe he's trying to ham it up with that mm-hmm. Texas accent, and they do that because he has a mustache, or I don't know what they were thinking with that accent.
I mean, it's so bad, but then it's so funny to listen to it. That's why I'm like, okay, I can get behind this.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the character in, I think it was Megazone 23, the manga, where he has like a Hank Hill kind of sounding accent.
AJ, the game! You promised! That redneck kid. Yeah. That was in part 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of other stuff that, like, we didn't get anything for a while because they had the right stuff sales, so, like, our supply was a bit dry, which was fine because it felt like I can catch up on stuff, which I didn't. But,
there's still a tremendous amount of stuff that's non-gen related to.
Yeah, but I've been checking out the stuff we got, like, back in the summer, back in the spring. So I'm looking at my shelf and I'm seeing that, I guess I talked about like, cause I got the original Gundam on Blu-ray and I felt like we got that early last year. And so like I got a chance to finally like finish up the original Gundam last spring, I believe. I thought I talked about it on a previous episode, and maybe I have.
Yes, we did a review of the first one and of the Zeta one.
Okay.
And then we haven't talked about the Double Zeta or the Victory or the Turnet. Counterattack,
yeah.
Shars Counterattack or F-91 or 0080.
Yeah, well let me get my Blu-ray for Victory, because I think the second set has, like, it has a bunch of promo commercials on it. Mm-hmm. And like that's the one that's kind of, alright. So basically what I did with my Victory Gundam Blu-rays is I got all my Victory Gundam model kits, or the ones that I have, and a corner of my section is my Victory Gundam Shrine. That I have my Blu-rays up there, my animation stuff from the opening, and so that's like my Victory Gundam Blu-rays are on this like one section of my shelf. All right, so like the first set has the first 26 episodes, clean opening and closing, end of episode promos, and they have the eye catch animation, which they took that, you know, the eye catch things in the middle of the episodes, where it's one giant piece of animation, they put it all together. And you can kind of hit fast forward and see like how the horror grows big and like the dog freaks out, and it's really awesome looking. Mm-hmm. And then the second Blu-ray, touching it right now, not knocking crap over. This one has end of episode promos and TV spots and commercials, because they promoted like some of the, they had some promotions of what it was like on TV at the time. And I think they did their best to clean it up, and it actually looked pretty good on the Blu-ray.
Tune in to watch episode 5 before episode 1.
Yeah, well, they had some sort of contest to win Gunpla, too. So they had that on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
All right, I'm looking at Double Zeta right here. See, Double Zeta is kind of like... Okay, let me get both of these suckers out. Because, like, I'm looking at the first set, which is basically clean opening, clean closing, and TV spots. on the first set. And then the second one is just the clean opening, clean closing for the second opening and endings. And that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. So really not
that, not anything.
Yeah, not that interesting. But, I mean, I looked at all the quality for these episodes.
They made a documentary for the Mobile Suit one, but with the other series, it's not been quite as much in terms of like a lengthy special feature like that making of Mobile Suit documentary that they had on the first
Mobile Suit game. that was really interesting for them. But that's everything coming from like the Blu-ray set in Japan,
right?
Okay, so
I'm guessing they thought it wasn't worthwhile doing one for his double Saiyan because nobody likes it.
That could be it.
They would have to explain why they chose to make Shard Counterattack into a movie instead of being a show, and how they had to scramble this thing together at the last minute, and it was just more cost as embarrassing.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got Shard Counterattack in my hands, and this one contains the first. It says the first original full-length theatrical feature. Also includes Japanese trailers and a special promotion video. And honestly, like, I thought, like, oh, this is just a copy from the DVD that Bandai put out, like, in 2002, which I have. But with the Blu-ray, they did add, like, a couple more promos. So that's interesting, because that wasn't on the original Shards Counterattack DVD. And the thing is, like, I looked at Shards Counterattack, and I was expecting the quality to be a lot better looking. And that's been kind of, like, my big complaint since I saw it. And I haven't had a chance to look at, like, my Laserdisc or my DVD versions to compare it. But, I mean, I felt like it looks about the same, but I feel like I can honestly say, like, you know, we got F91 in. And I watched, like, the first 10 minutes of F91, and that, to me, looks a whole lot better than Char's Counterattack. So, like, I have to kind of figure out, like, what masters were used. Like, were they both the original masters, or did, like, you know, did they have to use a Laserdisc one? Because Bandai, the original masters of Char's Counterattack, messed up. I don't know. But you've got all these people, like, these so-called anime review experts, like, oh, Shards Counterattack looks good. And I'm like, I don't see it. I mean, yeah, it looks good, but, like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, it could just look so much better.
I guess that's anime remastering for you. A lot of the time,
yeah,
they make it look worse, better.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I popped in F91, and I was like, holy crap. Like, I feel like F91 looks so good.
F91, how many years later was it made compared to the Shards Counterattack
movie? F91 came out in 19... I think it was 1990, I think? I know it came out before 0083.
So this is just like 1 or 2 years later or something?
Yeah, something like that. It came out like... Because Shards Counterattack was 88. So F91 had been like 1990-91. Let me check the Blu-ray box.
So I just Googled it. And it's March 12, 1988 for Shards Counterattack, and March 15, 1991. So almost exactly 3 years later.
Okay. Yeah, and then I felt like it was like right after is when 0083 started coming out.
Yeah, I mean, you do see a big improvement just from Double Zeta to Shards Counterattack.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be like a big jump up in terms of the animation quality. And then that kind of stayed there for F91 and for the OVAs, where it looked more detailed and better coloring and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was some sort of just revolution within the anime industry in that point of time, or some technological innovations or what, but I remember thinking it looked really good on the DVD. I have yet to check out the Blu-ray. Maybe it looks the same, maybe it looks a little better, or maybe it even looks worse, who knows, with the way anime remastering turns out. I mean, for me, a lot of the times, like, with Dragon Ball Kai, I think the remastering looks terrible. You watch the Raditz Saga on a VHS tape, and it's going to look better than it does on the remastered version, because, I mean, they removed all the blood, and then there's all these specks all over all of the black. So whenever you see any Saiyan hair, all that huge black hair, you see the specs all over it. Like, the remastering didn't bother to put a fresh paint coat on top of the black to get rid of all the specs on the animation, and it's a really half-assed animation remastering that they did on that. And I mean, Toei is just bottom of the barrel in terms of remastering. You've got those Sailor Moon Blu-rays that everyone hates as well. And I don't really know about Bandai, whether they have a good reputation for remastering or not. I guess since you said that the professional reviewers for Anime News Network and whatnot said it was good, I guess probably is pretty good. And
well, the thing is, I think it's right stuff getting the stuff and just transcoding it. But like Victory Gundam, like high definition looked fantastic to me. Like I popped
some of them
come out and really good.
Some of them come out on DVD here, and those are the ones that haven't been remastered yet in Japan. They're just using the Japanese remasters. Yeah. Because, like, with 0080, it hasn't been remastered in Japan yet. And with Turn A, they released it on DVD first because it hadn't been remastered in Japan yet, and I guess they don't have the budget to remaster it themselves. So they just release whatever Japan is releasing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I popped in Turn A, the Blu-ray that we got, and, like, I thought it looked really good.
Uh-huh. And, okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're working on 0083, right, stuff is.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's a, I don't know if it's been on Blu-ray in Japan yet or not.
I think so, yeah. I think
yeah,
it was
so, like, to me, that just blows my mind on how gorgeous that's going to be, because, like, 0083,
yes.
Like, even in VHS form, it still looks so beautiful.
Right, that's the only way I've seen it, and it is very, yeah. Very nice to look at.
I mean, I've got the Bandai DVD complete collection thing that I got, like, before Bandai crashed and those DVDs went up in price. But, like, you know, my mind is just like, holy crap, 0083 is going to look so amazing on Blu-ray. And it's like, I can't wait to look at, like, the first episode. Because, like, on my spleen, like, I downloaded someone's, like, Gundam collection or whatever they taped on Adult Swim. Like in 2000, like 2003 or 2002 or something.
So you have tapes of it yourself from back then?
Yeah, well, like I've got the original recordings off 0083 off to, Adult Swim in like early 2002 when I was in high school. And then they re-aired it that summer along when they started putting Mobile Suit Gundam on late at night. So like I'm getting these episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam and 0083 in this torrent file from MySpleen. And, like, I'm watching 0083, and, like, I couldn't put it down. Like, I just enjoyed looking at it. Like, it was just so daggum cool.
Yeah, I know a lot of people hate it because of the romance plot or whatever, but I thought it was, overall, it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and had a lot of really nice animation and mecha designs and fight scenes.
Yeah, I see 0083, and I've said this before, I'm sure, that, like, it's definitely, like, the Top Gun of the Gundam series. Like, you know, Top Gun's not a serious movie. It is pretty dumb. But when it comes to doing what it wants to do in terms of action and mobile suit fights, like, it's there. I mean, the plane scenes and, like, you know, what they're trying to visually do in Top Gun to make aerial combat look as, like, awesome as possible in cinema is, like, the utmost dream of, like, what mobile suit battle should have been like. In the early, you know, by the time the early 90s hit for Mobile Suit Gundam fans. And that's like where 0083 delivers. And to me, that still just holds up so well. But then you got like Gundam Thunderbolt, which apparently like people are going crazy over. And I haven't gotten around to watching that yet, but like from what I've seen, like it looks good. Even Unicorn Battles look really good too. So it's going back to that like, you know, really flashy animation and just well done, you know, mobile suit combat that's on, you know, these OVAs. And, I mean, even the stuff, like, the mobile suit battles in, you know, Gundam the Origin, I'd still like, because it was very animated, even though they used 3D models, but that didn't bother me as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot of people hate that stuff, but yeah, I thought the color, you know, very vibrant, the Origin, and, even though this scene at the very start of the first one was filler, I mean, we talked about that. It was filler in the minds of the internet, but it added a necessary element of action to the very story-driven political OVAs of kind of the Origin, which are mostly just about, you know, how Shara and Sailor grew up. And, it was kind of necessary to have that in there, and we talked about that before. But I thought they did have very good animation, even though a lot of people criticized it, you know, Jacob Pascal and all of them. But, you know, I don't really care what they have to say.
Well, I especially don't care what Jacob Pascal has to say.
Right, yeah. He can... Well, he knows what he can do.
Very proudly, you may add.
I'm sure he'll post all about it on the that Power Rangers forum that Cloud goes to about what he's doing with his anime statues.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Jacob. But, I don't know, like, I'm not missing anything from Gundam, am I? I think we kind of covered, like, the stuff we got.
Did we talk about all of them?
I think we did. Like, I... Like,
in did you check for the double features on 0080?
Oh, crap. Yeah, I did get 0080 on DVD. That's right.
Around Turn A?
Oh. I looked a little bit at Turn A, and I thought it looked pretty good. I thought I said that.
Yeah, yeah, so but did you see if there were any, like, ads, TV ads from Japan or anything on there, or clean opening?
Okay, so 0080, actually, I want to do a comparison to my old DVD complete collection of 0080 from Bandai. They both have the same cover. Looking on the back here.
It's just a reissue.
I think it's literally a reissue because I'm looking at the Right Stuff one. It says, contains all six episodes of the first OVA in the Gundam franchise. It's clean opening, clean ending, Japanese trailer collections, music videos, and all that Gundam video. I'm looking at the Bandai stuff. Bandai, from a decade ago, offered Texas opening, Texas ending one, Japanese trailer Texas collection, Mobile Suit Encyclopedia, music videos, all that Gundam video clip, and Texas ending two. So I feel
what
like
is
it's
all
about
that Gundam?
All that Gundam was like a quick, like 1 minute video of like this really cool animation that a bunch of people that worked on Gundam kind of put together. It's on YouTube.
And it's on the old DVD, but not the new one?
It's on both DVDs, actually.
Oh, it's on both, okay.
Well, yeah.
I'll have to check that out. That was not on my VHS tapes of 0080. I don't have the DVD before they sent it to me. So I'm glad I got it, but at the same time, I think that this was a mistake for them to release it before they had a Blu-ray version. Since they're
Yeah, now people are going to be double-dipping into it. Like, oh, I got to get 0080 on, you know, Blu-ray now, and it's going to look... you know, better, but it's like you could have...
Yeah. Well, they do this program where, with Eternity at least, they released it on DVD first, and then they released it on Blu-ray, and you can redeem your DVD for a Blu-ray. I don't know how it's cost-effective for them to do that. I think it's a mistake to release it on DVD when there's other stuff that's on Blu-ray in Japan that they could be releasing here, like G-Gundam. I mean, why is G-Gundam not out here yet?
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe it's a held up in rights. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's going to come out eventually. They have the rights to all the Gundams. It's just, I think that they're being pressured by Sunrise to release all of the Universal Century stuff as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think they're just like, they have to release it in a certain order, according to them.
Right. I mean, that's probably why nobody else would put up with Sunrise's demands. You know, it took years for Gundam to get licensed by anybody. And I guess Right Stuff, it was like, well, we don't really have anything as big profile of Gundam, so this would be a big score for us, even if we have to put up with some unreasonable requests for how to, what release order we should put it in. And so, I mean, it makes some sort of sense for them, but on a business perspective, because they have released so many of these in so little time, that they must be making money on it. But I do think that they are making some minor mistakes here in the order they're putting it out, but it's probably not their fault. It's probably the fault of Sunrise Japan, because we know that they have no sense about what order to release things in, from the fact that they aired Mobile Suit Gundam right after Wing aired in the US.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Yeah,
that wasn't
a Toonami decision. That was a Bandai decision, because they were like, we have to heavily promote Mobile Suit Gundam. And, you know, DeMarco's like, I don't think this is going to look good. And, I mean, they found every way to can it, which was 9/11. And Adult Swim had it a year later on Late at Night, it never fully ran on either block, which is interesting.
Yeah, there's several episodes that never aired. And you know, it's unfortunate, but that's a big part of why Gundam is such a failure in America. They could have had X on, of course, and that would have done much better because it has much more modern animation. And it's a much more serialized plot.
Yeah, and it's very engaged. Visually, it's very similar to Gundam Wing, so like X would have done well. And then people would have probably thought like, oh, it's a sequel to Wing or something like that. I mean, like, they could have done like a Carl Masek thing and try to intertwine the two series together. The animation looks about, the animation looks about the same. The story's about the same. I mean, really, but.
Yeah, I guess they could have. I mean, X is, it's a pretty good show. And I think it would have worked, even though it didn't really do so well in Japan. I think it would have worked well on Toonami.
I think if X was supposed to finish out the way it was supposed to, instead of like cramming, trying to finish a series in 30 something episodes because it had poor ratings, it would have done a whole lot better and made, I think, a little bit more sense. But, I mean, canceled, like, yeah, but like from what, you know, we saw and we reviewed, I was just like, it feels like the same as Wing. I don't really hate it, but I mean, I'm like, I don't know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But I'm not actively seeking Gundam X, though. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in some ways it's even better. Did it come out before or after Wing? I don't even remember.
It came out after Wing, yeah.
After, yeah. I think it's got a little less emphasis on the whole pretty boy Bishonen thing that Wing has going for it. I think it probably would have appealed more to boys than Wing did, and maybe even done better than Wing here. I don't know. But yeah, I guess we shouldn't really relitigate things from 15 years ago and complain about their mistakes, because at least it did finally come out here on DVD. But, you know, like, that's another show where it will eventually be out on Blu-ray in Japan. I don't know if they really needed to release it on DVD first. Like, they probably would make more money if they didn't have to send these things to people in Blu-ray after they already bought it on DVD, because that's having to pay twice as much for manufacturing discs, and it's not really all that sensible from a business perspective when they could put out the higher sellers that are already on Blu-ray in Japan. You know, I think Wing has already been put out on Blu-ray in Japan, and it's not come out here.
That's true.
And they could obviously make a bundle off of that, enough to support all the future releases. And if the releases start doing poorly here, they might not even make it to Wing. So if they start having to lose money off of having to reissue these turn-A things on Blu-ray and send them out to people, you know, I think they're making poor choices about the order here.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, I think the manufacturing of the Blu-ray is the cheapest part of the process, and the other parts is making sure that money goes back to Bandai and Sunrise, and then whatever's left, it makes up for marketing and distribution cost, for right stuffs in. They can turn a profit that way. So, I don't know, they're definitely made for the fans, and like, in terms of like, upgrading stuff, it's a practice that was used in the early days of distribution by anime companies. I know Anime Ego did it. Probably a couple others. But like, it's definitely like a better way. It makes right stuff look good, that it's not like the whole double dipping practice, because Funimation wouldn't do something like that. They want you to double dip.
Right, Funimation would make you pay for it twice.
Yeah. Well,
that's what they're trying to do all the time.
Yeah, they'll make you pay for it twice, 300, 400, 500 times. But, like, you know, that's your decision to upgrade it to this, like, newer version that they just so happen to figure out on their editing area that makes the video look slightly better than what it did before. And then about 6 months later, oh, we came up with a better version of it. And it's like, I never could understand why they put out 1.01 of Evangelion movie and it was so dark. And then a 1.11, it was like, oh, we fixed the lighting issue. You have to rebuy it again. Mm-hmm. Which I fell for. Anyways, but.
Yeah, and then that's a whole other story, but that's what they do with all their properties. Mm-hmm. How they really string Ball Z every couple of years with some new mistake each time, and you know, then they make people buy it again in hopes that it'll be fixed this time.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean,
it's a joke. Company.
Yeah, I mean, ADV like did that with Evangelion, where it was like the black box, and then they found the platinum editions, and then it was like, oh, you can get the special 10 edition, and now like they don't even have that anymore. It's the Funimation. So whenever Funimation puts out the Blu-rays. Honestly, like, now that we're talking about it, like, if that ever happens where Funimation puts out those Blu-ray sets, I'm gonna have to hold off because then you know they're going to come up with three more renditions to improve it better. So you might as well wait for the very last one, get that, and then they're going to somehow like, oh, we ran out, let's hike the prices up. And they're like, well, at least I got the better version release of Funimation. I didn't have to dibble dip five times to get it.
The problem is you're never going to know which version is going to be the last, because you don't know how long they're going to hold on to the rights.
I know, but... It's like I'd rather wait till like version 2 of the Blu-rays come out or something and then probably get it. It's better to hold off and be like, okay, I'm not going to go for the first one. Unless it's like, unless something comes up where it's like, absolutely, like, we're not going to release this ever again. This is all we got on Blu-ray. And then it would have
to be. Didn't you buy 3 right when it got released?
Wait. Oh, yeah, I got version, yeah, I got 3.3 when it came out, the day it came out. And.
Mm-hmm. Even though that was a very troubled release.
Yeah, but they haven't done a re-release of it. They haven't done like a 3.34 to improve like one mistake that they should have done. There's nothing like that. And there's no need for me to get 3.33 again.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Well, I guess we kind of covered all this stuff.
Yeah.
I think Roth was on, and I go watch that with my dad, but do you want to record closing remarks, like, in a little bit? Because I figure we have a lot to talk about with, you know, all the election stuff going on and everything. Or,
yeah.
Or do you just have something quick to say or anything? Or we would probably go on for a while about stuff.
There's really nothing quick I want to say because, like, I could talk about some of the stuff I got from Myrtle Beach when I went a couple weeks ago. I turned 31 last week. There's all the inauguration stuff on Trump and the protests and that Spencer guy getting sucker punched in the face, and people are cheering about that, which both sides are stupid. So no, there's more to say on that.
You want to resume in like 40 minutes or so, or do you want to record again tomorrow, or
like
they're still gonna be here?
I don't know how late I'm gonna get back tomorrow. Like, is there any way you can just record Gotham and watch that later, and we can just finish this up and get?
I don't know, he's pretty picky. He'll come up here in like a minute or two and he's gonna be like, we gotta watch it now. Because he's so into it.
Alright, I'll be up for the next 40 minutes, so I'll just stop
and right.
Okay. I'll just say this is part one of my recording, so then like I know, like, okay, I'll start a part two.
Yeah, I'm gonna look through like the tweets that Cloud has posted today too, because I'm sure there's gonna be some stupid stuff in there we could talk
about. Alright, cool. Alright, I'll just chill out then.
Alright, I'll be right back.
Alright, stay tuned! Hey guys, so since this episode is a Right Stuff theme review because we got products in from Right Stuff, I just want to tell you about the cool stuff that's happening on Right Stuff right now at rightstuffanime.com. I am looking at Mobile Suit Gundam 0080 War in the Pocket DVD that's got a, you can add to the cart as a pre-order that doesn't ship out until January 3rd of next year. And they have it at a promotion price of $19.49. So definitely get that. So let's go to the homepage and check out what they got. They got a yen press sale. It's only 33% off on titles with the promo code YP-2006. That's YP-2016. Not 2006, dadgummit. So there's also that going on. I do see that there's a featured item on the website, Kimba the White Lion DVD, the entire TV collection on DVD for $38.99. I'm not sure how long this sale is going to last since I'm recording this on a Sunday night, but you guys can definitely check that out. Also, we have another promo happening right now. We got a promotion from a website called Anime Cart at animecart.com. Anime Cart reached out to us, and we are here to promote Anime Cart as an online retailer that can hook you guys up with the best anime merch for your needs. You guys need a love pillow, a cosplay accessory, a Dragon Ball Z figure? Hey, they got it. We actually have our permanent promo code that you can use on their website at animecart.com. By using this promo code, you will get 10% off any purchase. Also, by when you use our promo code, that money that you spend on those items comes back to us. We get a percentage out of that to help fund the podcast. So, the promo code is going to be AOI Podcast, all capital letters. And to spell it out in all capital letters, that's AOYPODCAST. Should not be too hard to figure out how to use that. So, now that you got the promo code at AOY Podcast, definitely go on animecart.com and get whatever you need to get from that site that will suit your needs. So please enjoy products from AnimeCart.com and especially RightStuffAnime.com for all your needs. Now, on to closing remarks. Tell me, I'm not in Do Not Disturb mode. I have to call you up. Alright, you hear me?
Uh-huh. It looks like it worked this time, huh?
I don't know why right I'm in a... I don't know why I'm out in a Do Not Disturb mode. I just talked on the chat 2 seconds ago.
I think you said it where it goes at that mode in certain hours of the day or something, or at least that's what I did when we first got the program.
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of smart, actually.
Yeah, it does that at like 10 o'clock my time, I think, even if I'm awake and on the chat. Yeah, it's weird.
All right. So you had dinner and watched Gotham. And...
Right. And then my dog had to go outside, and like it ended up taking twice as long as I thought it would. But, yeah.
I wind up just reading about, like, people's fan tabletop RPGs of Gundams or Gundam games. Like, there's so many people out there that have made so many Gundam tabletop RPG versions based on, like, other RPG games.
Oh, really?
Because I was at a game store, like, one of those game stores with, like, cards and RPG games. That's near my university because they made this place because there was a comic book shop near my college that used to be the hub for people to play RPG games, and the owner there wound up kicking and banning like a ton of people from there because he didn't want them over there anymore. So we'll see how long that comic book shop lasts for. But so it looks like they set up a new spot like right near downtown Anderson, and someone I talked to at school today was had like magic cards out, and we were talking. And he told me about this place. So I went over there and I saw that, like, I've seen these before, but it's those, like, Star Wars, like, Rebellion or Star Wars Armada, which is, like, they make these replica, like, ships and, like, the starfighters, and they got, like, the big Victory Class Star Destroyers and stuff. They look so cool, but it's, like, really pricey, and it's, like, if you're going to do this, it's, like, investing, like, about $100. For like a baseline kit thing to get started. I'm just like, I'm not entirely sold on doing that just yet.
Mm.
Yeah. Although they look really, really cool.
Yeah, I don't really know much about tabletop RPGs.
Neither do I, even though I have like a few books on them. I've got like the Bubblegum Crisis ones. I've got a first edition Shadowrun and some other stuff. I think I've got a Robotech RPG too.
A few years ago, Daft sent us all a Shadowrun book, PDF, and he was like, we're all going to play this game on Skype. And it never happened.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I think I barely remember that.
Yeah, that was like when we first got Skype. I was like, this is something cool.
I think I do remember, because I was like, yeah, I know Shadowrun. I'll definitely play this. Of course, like all Daft's plans, they never come to fruition.
Yeah, maybe he's going to play it when he gets the board game cafe. Okay, and never.
Yeah, that too. Case in point. Let's just go ahead and get stupid politics talk out of the way, since that's both on our minds, and then we can talk about fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just now clicking on this crap that Cloud linked to, and it's all about it's really good to punch people who you don't agree with, and like his whole timeline. I guess because he lives in Boston, is ultra left wing, and they're all saying that you should punch all the Trump voters and that sort of thing.
Well,
because of the incident where Richard Spencer, who is definitely not a nice guy in terms of that sort of stuff he says, but guy is like. Got punched it in the face, and it was filmed and put online, and everybody on left-wing Twitter is, like, cheering for it.
Okay. Like, I don't know the Spencer guy too much, but, like, is he really, like, a pro-Nazi or, like, the description is either pro-Nazi or white nationalist or alt-right extremist. They're, like, the three titles he has online, and I'm not sure which one to believe, if not all of them.
Well, I mean, this guy's history is that he is, got fired by American Conservative magazine, which is sort of a, you know, Trump Buchanan, that kind of, you know, nationalist conservative, but not really that racist or anything. Magazine, because they thought he was too racist, and they had him on as like an intern when he was fresh out of college or something. Mm-hmm. And then he went off and founded his own think tank, which is kind of like publishes a bunch of racist stuff about how blacks are inferior and their race shouldn't exist and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So he is like a legitimately awful racist guy. But he shouldn't be punched in the face because, well, you know, the, like, there's no right to just punch people in the face that you think are mean people.
That's true, too. Well, here's the way I look at it. I think both parties, Spencer and the guy that not just punched him but sucker punched him, they're a bunch of pussies. So here's the way I look at it. Spencer is a pussy because he took a punch and then ran away with his tail tucked between his legs instead of fighting back. The guy who sucker punched him is a pansy because he sucker punched him and he ran away thinking like it was a victory instead of sitting there beating the crap out of him.
And people have been making fun of Spencer because he later on he went online and he posted from what he described as being
a safe space. Yeah, I saw that.
People
I was
saying
like,
he's a hypocrite because he's one of those guys who mocks college students' safe spaces. But now he's like, I need a bodyguard because I'm so afraid to be out there.
As soon as I saw something like that, I was like, all right, I don't care about this guy anymore. He's dumb. And then also, like, one of the bystanders tracked down the guy who sucker punched Spencer and confronted him about the same thing we're talking about, like, you don't have the right to punch people. And all the bystanders, or the puncher guy, was just like, oh, F you. You know, he's a Nazi. I did what I had to. And he kept walking. He wouldn't and flipped the bystander off that was filming him doing this. So, like, he's not even like, you did something and you're not even standing by what you did. That's why I said both parties are pussies. And they're a bunch of pansies. No one won. There's no, like, if you're going to do something like that, like, do it right. Like, at least chase the guy down. Show some initiative. Or, if you're the attacker, keep beating the crap out of him instead of just a quick sucker punch. And it wasn't even, like, Spencer wasn't even bleeding, so it wasn't even that bad. It was like a little pop. I mean, and everyone, the thing is, like, everyone's making this, like, into a big deal. Like, you know, this, like, mask Dark Knight is, like, you know, some sort of, like, vigilante that they're supposed, like, he did the right thing. And I'm like, no, he's a freaking thug punk idiot, you know? Like, nobody won out of this at all. And it's stupid. All of it's stupid. I don't know why they're celebrating this. It's retarded.
I think a lot of people have blown his influence out of proportion because, you know, like I said, he only had one mainstream job and it was like over 10 years ago. Oh. And he founded his own little think tank. But it's like totally fringe and it's just a bunch of internet trolls that believe in it. But because he's the one who came up with the term alt-right, which later on got used by other people who didn't know that he founded that term. And people have affixed that term to Trump, even though Trump has never called himself that.
Yeah.
So now people are acting like this guy's the intellectual godfather of Trump, and like he's really responsible for everything that's happened, even though 60 million people voted for Trump, and 99% of them have never heard of this guy. And this guy is like a totally marginal figure that is just blown out of proportion by the media. And I don't really think that he's had any real respectability in a long time. And so I think it's really ridiculous for them to act like this guy is like some major threat. And then I guess the reason he got punched is because people saw the media hyping up like the fact that he held some conference after Trump got elected. And that was where he did the see Kyle to, and said like, hail the Fuhrer of Trump and everything. And
yeah, I didn't know any of this, so.
Yeah, so this guy, he's like, you know, he's like kind of a troll, and I think he really is getting what he wants here by getting so much attention. Oh, I mean, when you go out and say stuff like you should wipe out all the minorities, and then a minority comes up to you and slugs you in the face, and then you get to cry about it online and act like you're the victim.
That's exactly what he did. He cried about it like he was a victim, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is all pathetic. But it was a white dude dressed in black. He even sounded white. It wasn't a black guy, so he's not really a minority.
You can't really know because he's got a mask on, right?
Well, his, like, you see his eyes and everything, and it was pretty, like, light-skinned, like, from what I saw, when, like, when the bystander chased him down.
I only saw the Joe Vita version of it, which is where Joe Vita uploaded a video on YouTube, and it's got, like, 20 seconds, and it's like, Spencer's up there, and he's like, I really think Pepe the Frog is a great symbol of our movement, and this guy runs up out of nowhere and slugs him. And then Joe Vita puts on the song, One Punch! And from the One Punch Man theme song. Which I thought was pretty funny.
Well, you posted it at school and I saw the video. I just couldn't play it because I was in the middle of like comp theory class. So I was like, oh, I'll watch this later. Or it might have been Spanish or something. But yeah. I didn't get to see that. But like we have it in the notes, so I'll definitely look that up.
Yeah, it's funny.
No, well, the thing is like this guy does a speech and like if you're the alt-right, you know, neo-Nazi, now that you're saying it, going into, like, a, you know, an anti-Trump protest, it's walking into a wasp nest, and they're pissed off like crazy. It's a bad combination. He never should have been there in the first place. But that's on him, because, to get attention.
Mm-hmm. So he could play the victim and get headlines and make more money by having more people go to his site, because people will feel sympathy for him because he got assaulted, and that'll get him more followers.
If you never go to the police and categorize it as an assault, it's not an assault. It's a sucker punch. And plus, who knows if they ever found this guy? Like, there's people that are like, trying to actively find who the puncher guy is. It's like, at this point, just let it go.
Yeah, they probably will never
Both people are just sorry. So.
Yeah, I mean, this guy fell for the bait, and I guess it made him feel good to punch the guy. But, you know, you really shouldn't punch people you don't agree with. Because, I mean, the fact is that we're in a situation where there's, just a tremendous amount of division in this country. And, you know, that's not going to be solved by punching people that you dislike. Nope. And it's not going to be solved by going on the street and protesting either, because Trump is president. And there's nothing that they can really do about that for all the screaming
they want to do. They're going to try to do something about it. There's, what was it, freepress.org? It's like, we're going to do 100 days of distractions. And we're going to try to disrupt our disruption. We're going to disrupt Trump. And I'm like, you guys are not going to do anything. He doesn't care. He's going to keep doing, like, keep going on what he said he was going to do. Like, today, it's not even the end of the first day of his day in office, and he's already, like, done an executive order to strike down the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right, yeah. And that, you know, that was already kind of dead in the water anyway, because...
Oh, yeah.
They never got it approved by Congress or anything. But yeah, I mean, he did cancel it, and that's what he promised he was going to do, and everybody said he's just conning his followers. But, is a campaign promise that he actually followed through on. So...
Yeah.
And if you look at the inauguration speech, I don't know if you saw it or not.
I saw it without the volume on, and then I caught the end of it. So.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, it's the same kind of stuff he said in the campaign, which leads me to believe it's not just a reality star trying to con people. It seems like he's really setting out his agenda, and he's actually going to follow through on what he's saying on a lot of stuff.
I know he kind of made a promise, is what I understood. And I was like, you can't really promise that, but I understand your heart's in the right area. And I just know you're saying, like, he actually called, like, radical Islamic terrorists, which is something Obama never said. And Obama was sitting there with a pout face.
Yeah. Obama had this really stony look on his face when Trump said that. I think the media deliberately cut to him because they knew that he had refused to use that term for the entire presidency.
Yeah.
Like, going back to the first speech he gave about it, where he went to Cairo and he spoke and said, like, you know, George Bush is responsible for all this terrorism and I'm going to be different and it's not the fault of Islam and it's America's fault and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well,
I'm not going to be getting that out of Trump, even though he does acknowledge Iraq was a mistake, but he's not going to say, like, these terrorists are blameless and it's just America's fault.
I mean, you can't change the past, but you sure as heck could have made the future better. And, I mean, you know, I've said it where, like, I wish Saddam was still alive because he kept all those radicals but we also should have never pulled out like we did and freaking announced it 6 months in advance. Which, it seemed like as soon as that happened, we had the Arab Spring incident, Arafat was executed by his people, and all this crap went down in Obama's second term, essentially.
And you have to acknowledge also that Manning is responsible for a lot of this because of
the fact
that he released this stuff about us having, shot these reporters in Iraq.
Yeah, and the
Iraqi government.
And there was some kids involved.
The Iraqi government used this as an example to say, you can't stay here because you're not properly trying your soldiers for war crimes. And you're giving yourself immunity, and you can't do that if you want to stay. So, part of the reason the region became so destabilized is this guy, who then Obama goes on to pardon.
Yeah.
How he's not pardoning the guy who leaked out the Hillary emails from WikiLeaks. He's pardoning the original WikiLeaks leaker who leaked out all this stuff that had much more negative consequences than whoever the leaker of those Hillary emails was. Because those just gave the American people information about their presidential candidates and what they're really doing behind closed doors. But this guy, he released all this stuff about all these foreign governments and all this stuff going on in the Middle East that totally caused chaos and the rise of ISIS. And so, it's apples and oranges there, where people act like the stuff WikiLeaks is doing now is like some evil Russian subterfuge. But, really, the earlier stuff they did had much more negative consequences than what they've done in recent months.
I mean, I've seen the video with, the reporters, and I understand, it's bad, and, probably as a public, some of us should have known about that instead of trying to hide it, but, at the same time, you always got to look at the broader picture. Like, if I release this, I understand it's like, showing that, what we're doing in Iraq is not a good thing. I mean, not every single thing, but, at the same time, it's just like, okay, what are the major consequences that's going to happen? Like, yeah, we're going to pull out and the country's going to totally destabilize it, which is exactly what it did. It's kind of important, but that's something that could have went towards the news because, stuff like this happened, during Vietnam in terms of, leaking, information about, what soldiers were doing to, the people over there. And eventually all that information got out, but, it's more of a time and place thing. And, regardless, Manny is a traitor, and I guess to me, my impression was, okay, he's been in prison, he committed treason, and Obama pardons him, one of his last executive order things, which it hasn't still processed yet. It's just kind of sped it up, is what you're saying.
Because he gets out in May.
It just shows, to me, my example of that is, oh, that kind of leaves an example, if I'm a trans person and I break the law, then I can get out of it scot-free because I'm trans and because Obama pardoned this trans guy for, an act of treason, which is not right.
And I saw some people arguing about this, and one of them was saying, well, now everybody's just going to put on a wig and say, I didn't mean to do what I did because I'm confused about my gender.
Oh my gosh.
And then the other person was like, you can't doubt someone's gender identity ever because that's transphobic. I mean, that's the sort of culture we're living in now, where you can't question anybody else.
Yeah,
about anything.
You can't judge or call someone else's, essentially bullshit out. No, your decision to leak that information didn't come from your sexual identification of yourself. It came from you doing something you shouldn't have done, or you should have known full well of the consequences, even if you did do it. And if you did, you deserve to stay in prison, despite whatever the pardon says. And if you're really honest about that, that's the way I feel. It's like, if you're going to do something like that, you got to own up to the consequences and be responsible. This is not showing responsibility. And the pardon to me is just throwing that responsibility out the window and setting a terrible example on that.
Yeah. And it's just, I just think it's really a mess, the whole thing of people saying, well, what's Trump going to do to this person? And they really guilted Obama into it because they were all saying, like, Trump's gonna, I don't even know what they think he's gonna do. Go in there to prison and personally beat him to death, or who knows.
He's not gonna do that. You know,
but people have this ultra paranoid attitude about Trump and the transgendered, where they think that, you know, he's gonna get rid of Obama's executive order about the transgender bathrooms and all that, even though Trump himself said that transgender people can use whatever bathroom they want in his buildings. So they just try to conflate Trump with Pence, even though Pence is not the president, because they think Pence is really anti-gay because of something he supported 20 years ago or something, where he said something like, instead of funding AIDS research, we should fund ways to make people get over their homosexuality. And then people interpreted that as Trump wants to electrocute all the homosexuals. And then they think he still believes that, and he's gonna kill them all, and he's gonna set up camps, and they just have this ultra paranoid view about him. And I think they probably thought Manning is gonna be taken to one of the camps or whatever and treated even worse than he is in prison. I don't know. But I guess Obama buys into some of this stuff. I can't figure out why else, other than the whole transgender scaremongering, that he would choose to let Manning loose when he was the one who, you know, his administration prosecuted the guy and put him in jail for 35 years, and then he's like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I'm just going to let him go. Like, what's that about?
Yeah, that's freaking being a pansy right there. It's no, that's not right. You're supposed to stick to your word. And anyways, but and then also the fact, like, you know, the women's rally over the weekend was only big because of Trump's inauguration. And it's like, I saw on the, like, CBS, which I'm about to put up with how liberal CBS is going to be for the next 4 years. And they had like this expose thing on like the women that started like the march in Boston or whatever. And they're like, okay, you had your march. What are you going to do next? And they're like, we're going to still organize, and if we got to do a march every month to make awareness of this, then so be it. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you? Because, like, I'm not understanding, like, I guess I'm not getting it, John, in terms of women's rights. I thought we all, I honestly believe, like, we all have the same equal rights. Like, okay, maybe pay's an issue. Fine. Like, you know, that'll probably get handled itself. And, you know, for me, like, every female boss that I've worked under made more money than I did because they are my boss. I would expect them to. I've never really seen an issue, and I thought all this stuff was sort of taken care of, and, you know, it will, but, like, it's not, to me, it's not the end of the freaking world if a woman makes slightly less money than a guy. It's like, you at least have a job.
Well, the thing with the gender pay gap is it's based on misleading statistics that ignore the fact that there's many months where women don't work because they get pregnant and have children, and so as a result, their lifetime income is lower. And, you know, the U.S. does not have paid maternity leave like Europe does.
Yeah,
and you know, I agree with Bernie. That's an issue. Maybe they should have paid maternity leave. And even Trump says that. And so I don't know what they're complaining about. Trump says,
I know, you know, that's the thing. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know what they're complaining about. I'm like, it's not like he freaking murdered like 100 gay people and like walked over their corpses on the way up to his inauguration. Like, if he did that, like, we wouldn't be like saying that Trump is president now. There's no way that would fly. None of that stuff has happened, but in their minds, they think he does it every second. And I'm like, why are these people so delusional? And it's like, and some of the stuff, like in terms of like Roe v. Wade, and I mean, Roe v. Wade may or may not ever get overturned, but, and like the whole thing with the Supreme Court about like the gay marriage thing, like it's been done. And even if Trump was supposed to like get another conservative in there to be over the liberal judges, they're probably not going to overthrow it. They're probably just like, it's in law now. So it's just like, just let it go. But
yeah, I mean, the thing with that is, there is an empty Supreme Court seat.
Yeah.
But it's the seat of Scalia, who was already a pro-life justice, so it's just going to be one pro-life justice being replaced with another pro-life justice.
It'll be back the same way it was before, so.
Yeah, and while it is true that probably Ruth Bader Ginsburg will die or retire in the next 4 or 8 years when Trump is in there, she's a liberal Clinton justice who's pro-choice. Mm-hmm. I don't I don't really think it's necessarily a women's rights issue, the whole abortion thing, the way it's portrayed as. Because you have to keep in mind that half of the fetuses that are aborted are women as well, so don't they have rights as well? I mean, that's something that's just ignored by the left.
Yeah, it's like you're killing life inside of a person, but then you're also killing a female life. So you're killing your own kind, essentially, but because you say that. It's not just they're killing all the males out of there.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's only two genders.
and in places like China where they have forced abortion, it's the women that are always aborted, you know, because they want to have a boy. So, you know, because they have the one child policy that disproportionately affects women abortion in a negative way. So, you know, if women want to be keep being the majority on earth, which they are, even though they're often grouped in with minorities for whatever reason, you know, stuff like abortion is working against them. And so I just think there's a whole lot of confusion and hypocrisy in this sort of stuff where people don't really think about the other perspective at all.
It's a lot of, like, to me, just the cars on the road and the tires are spinning and it's doing donuts and just not going where it needs to go. But the driver behind the seat is so confident that they're halfway across the country in 5 seconds. I guess that makes sense. I don't know. But, like, the thing is, like, oh, that doesn't make sense. Well, that's how I feel about this whole issue.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe he will get rid of abortion, or maybe not. You know, I know Pence is pro-life, and you know, Trump is a recent convert to being pro-life. I don't think he was pro-life until maybe last year or 2015. But you know, he does say, like, he says the same stuff Romney says, which is, I know somebody who was almost aborted, and then they were not aborted and they turned out to be a great person. Maybe it's true in both cases. Maybe they're just saying that. I don't know. But you know, like, we shouldn't discount the fact that that sort of thing does happen where, you know, what if abortion had been a mainstream widespread practice hundreds of years ago? And, what if they had aborted George Washington or Beethoven or many of the great people throughout history? Think about all the millions of fetuses that have been aborted. And what their lives could have turned out like.
Well,
and how much of a tragedy that is. And people don't consider that. They just consider, well, isn't it unfortunate if I have to do something I don't want to do as a result of my own actions? Because, you know, it's your own actions that result in you becoming pregnant. It's not like the baby just appears there and happens because you had unprotected sex. And that is a consequence of your own, your responsibility. And so they act like it's all someone else's fault always.
Yep.
When the amount of abortions that, you know, occur from a woman who got raped, you know, it's probably 1%.
Yeah, it's apparently there's so many statistics backing up, like, oh, what about rape victims? And it's like, I mean, yeah, that makes sense, but that's so low. And honestly, like, you know, if a child is born out of a rape, it's not the kid's fault. The kid is innocent. Like, yeah, like, the mother needs to, I mean, the woman needs to realize that, like, you know, I understand where this baby came from in the circumstance, but there's a way to, like, you know, this kid to become something. It's not the baby's fault that, like, you know, yeah, it's the product of how I got raped, but, like, the child is not at fault at all. And that's not fair. Like,
it's not like there aren't other options if they aren't prepared to raise a child. I mean, there is a thing called adoption.
And foster homes, and yeah, like, if you don't want the kid, give it to someone else who will cherish it and raise it. And, I mean, honestly, like, I've heard this before, too. Like, John, if it wasn't for mistakes, none of us would be here. I had someone tell me that recently. It's like, mistakes are a good thing, because if we didn't have them, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people who are not deliberately conceived, and it turned out okay. So, I just think that people look at it only from one perspective, which is they say it's her body, she should choose. But, you know, there is another body involved in the abortion.
Yeah, women cannot asexually reproduce. Unless you freaking marry the mother of Jesus, that's a different story. Or maybe it was the Roman who raped her, who knows? Look, the important thing is Jesus died for her sins. So, but it's just a mess. And, I mean, hopefully with a conservative in office, like some of this political correctness, and I don't know if it's going to get worse or better. I'm hoping better, but it's not the fact that it's confusing. It's the fact that it's stupidly confusing. It just doesn't make any logical sense on why people are so upset. And I'm seeing both sides, and I'm like, why are you so upset? I don't get it. Like, what is going to make you happy? Apparently nothing. Because I've said this before, too. It's like, you know, you give in to these people's demands, which is what Obama did, and now they're just asking more and more and more. Like, well, it's not enough. It's never going to be enough. It will never be enough. You have to be content in where you're at. It will get better.
It's a permanent cultural revolution where they have a new demand every week.
It is a selfish cultural revolution. It's selfishness.
Right. And that, you know, it's impossible to keep up with it all.
I know.
Because there's always something new that they're pushing, and it's never intuitive. Like, no one would think of this sort of stuff that they say and demand just on their own, you know. But, you know, someone hears it and they hear, oh, well, this is the new thing that I have to support, or else I'm going to be tarred as some sort of evil person. So I have to support it. And it's all based on trying to coerce people into doing it, or else they're going to be boycotted and, you know, protested in front of, and people are going to call their employer and try to get them fired if they don't go along with whatever the new demand is. And so, you know, there's just, you know, a tremendous hate campaign that they run against anyone who dissents from their views. And, you know, just look at what they did to Breitbart, where they forced the cereal companies to stop advertising on there. Well, I mean, the cereal companies advertise on there because conservatives eat cereal too. And now, like, what are they supposed to do? Just only advertise their cereal to liberals? They're missing out on half the country if they do that. It doesn't make any economic sense for them to boycott, you know, Breitbart, but they do it anyway, because otherwise they're going to be accused of associating with backwardsness or whatever. And so they tend to, you know, push this sort of stuff.
Calling the kettle black. That's the way I say
it. Yeah.
I mean, backwards to what viewpoint? I still can't understand that, so. Well, I don't know. I think that's pretty much it. It was just basically inauguration, and the women's protest. But the thing is, like, if a men's protest happened, that'd be considered sexist.
Oh, of course.
I know.
Didn't you say that you had some stuff you bought at Myrtle Beach?
Oh, yeah. So I went on a family trip a couple weeks ago before school started to Myrtle Beach, and Myrtle Beach has some pretty good shops where I buy things. There's a cool comic book place called X-Con, that's right on the beach next to, like, Broadway Street. It's next to a zip line. Actually, it's, like, across the street from the zip line. So if you go to Myrtle Beach and there's a zip line area, there's a comic book shop along that strip, along that road that kind of leads up to Broadway, I believe. But there's also that. There is a comic book place up in, there's a mall in North Myrtle Beach that has a nice comic book shop inside there. It's a very desolate looking mall, but, like, the place that they have in there that sells, like, a ton, like, you know, a good amount of comics, but it's mostly video games and DVDs, anime merch, figurines. It's a general nerd shop, and it's, like, a great place. But the story with the comic book shop at X-Con, like, I wound up going in there twice, and the guy who runs the place, like, we couldn't stop. Like, I go in there, and we have be in, like, a 2 or 3 hour conversation. Because the second time I went in there, like, he had to tell me for, like, 45 minutes, like, the whole, like, how excited he was over the new Blade Runner movie. And then he started telling me, like, the synopsis of, like, the novel that's based on, like, the first Blade Runner movie that was, like, a direct sequel to it. And went into all this, like, intricate detail about it. And he's like, "You've seen Blade Runner, right?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah." And he's just like, "Blah, blah, 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 blah." And, he went into, like, how, like, oh, this is how the story would have gone. This is, like, you know, what Deckard's been doing. And it was, like, really interesting talking to him. And then we talked about other anime stuff. I guess I got your mic on mute, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm listening. So this guy wrote the novel or something, or he was just really into it?
No, he was just really into it. Like, he's a big Blade Runner fan. So one of the interesting things I picked up, and I guess there's a bit of a story to it. Well, I mean, I picked up like a Motoko Kusanagi figure that I think it's not McFarlane, but it's like from somebody else, but I've seen it before. But anyways, are you familiar with the Durmond, Yoshiyuki Sadamoto art book that came out like a decade ago?
I've seen it at cons, but I've never bought it or anything.
Okay.
I'm sure it's got some good art in it. I like his, the manga and everything.
Yeah. I've been wanting to get that book for like 14 years at this point, because they had it at Borders and I remember flipping through it. And there was awesome illustrations, like the stuff he come up with. Like, he worked on the illustration for the Fatal Fury games for like England, I think. So there's a different carver art for that. And that's kind of what I really wanted it for. But I got that from him, and then another book from him. But there's an interesting story, because half the pages in both of the Durmond book were ripped in half and taped back together.
What's that about?
Well, the best that the owner could gather was it probably came from a really bad breakup or divorce. So I think somebody grabbed the book and started ripping the pages in half. Like, they're like almost down right in the middle too. It's amazing.
I'm guessing this was some sort of Altingville style thing where there were two Ava fans working on it. Side of it, and it got torn in half.
I have no idea. It would not surprise me, John. But it was
maybe one wanted it for the race scenes, and one wanted it for the Oscar scenes or something.
I'll take pictures of this to show it. But like, it's the fact that someone went back into it and intricately found the right pieces and like taped it with like packaging tape, and they aligned it like just about as perfect as they could be.
Did you get a decent discount on it based on the fact that it had been damaged?
I think they got it for like maybe a couple of bucks or $5. I was like, hey man, this thing's damaged. She's like, can you give me a discount? I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I figured you'd like it. Not only that, it wasn't just that book, John. I picked up another that's Macross Design Works. It's like the Kawamori designs. Like, it spans from like the original Macross to like Macross 7 and some concept designs. That also had some pages ripped in half and duct taped back together. So, yeah.
Maybe someone broke into this guy's store and just started ripping everything apart since they're making it.
But here's the thing, like, he got this from, I think it was like a guy or girl that sold all this stuff in there. And the way he understood it is that they had like a big fight or something. And what was interesting was that behind the counter was a white Gandalf staff. And as I'm buying these books, he points to it and goes, yeah, that staff came in three pieces and I had to glue it back together. And he said that the person who was selling this stuff used that as a way to defend themselves because the other person was attacking them. So they're beating the shit out of each other with a Gandalf stick. And I'm just, and here I am holding, like, I have like, you know, this awesome design and art books. And I see the creases and the broken pages, and that's like, I'm holding a relationship that went terribly wrong, and it's for my own benefit because this thing was like $4. I don't care. The other thing that I got was a Evangelion like resin like ice cube tray thing. Like, you put water in it. And these molded shapes, and they come out as like the angel's face. It's like the satchel. Like, that was something else I got. I saw it. I was like, Evangelion related. I'm like, I don't care. I'm getting it. It looks pretty awesome. It's sitting on my shelf.
I'm guessing you didn't find that Ava head popcorn holder that Daft was so enthusiastic about.
I did not see that. That would have been pretty awesome to get. But Well, anyways, like, me and the owner there, like, he's supposed to be sending me an email sometime, because he's, like, wanting to go through some of his stuff and kind of get rid of it. And I'm just like, well, you know, if you take pictures of what you got, like, I'll sift through it. I sent him an email, and he hasn't responded. Also, I should send him another one, but I just was like, because he apparently has something I really want, and hopefully I can like either do a trade or buy it from him. I'm not sure. I did go to this other place, the game comic book place that's in North Myrtle Beach, and I got a stack of video game magazines, but particularly I got a stack of Nintendo Power stuff.
Oh, cool.
So I've got a Nintendo Power Index. It's basically like a little magazine that's indexing every issue of Nintendo Power going back from Volume 1 to Volume 50. I got that. I've got Nintendo Power Strategy Guide. 4-player extra fun, but it's got like, I think it's Tecmo Bowl. Oh, Power Bowl or whatever. It's like on the, it's like NES stuff. So it's got, it's Volume 19, it's what it says. That's interesting. And then I've also got a Street Fighter 2 Turbo cover that is, what issue is this? Oh, Volume 51. Nice. And then I've got something else that has a cover that says Game Over on it, and I gotta look through some of the stuff, but like I definitely bought some more Nintendo Powers there. I did get an import issue of New Type magazine that's got like one of the characters for free on it, the swimming anime. But I've always wanted an import in a New Type magazine, so I finally got one. I did get some movies. Oh, also from the same place, I got like a stack of Kimagure Orange Road on VHS. And it's the subtitle version from Anime Ego. The interesting thing is, like, this was at Myrtle Beach a couple years ago that they were selling. And I think it's just been rotting in their discount bin for years. Because I picked up, like, all 6 tapes, and I went to the owner, and I was like, hey, man, what would you give me for these tapes? And he's like, $5. So basically, I got them for, like, less than $1 per tape, which isn't too bad. So now I can watch, I think, about half of Kimagure Orange Road. But it's kind of broken up. Like, I've got, like, tape 2 and 3, or volume 2 and 3. And they've got, like, one of those, like, little spines that, like, you put the spines together and it makes an image. So it's not complete, but, like, it's still a good pack full of episodes that I can kind of, like, go through and watch eventually. So that's sitting on top of my VCR right now. That's pretty much about it. Cloud was talking
about downloading that series one time. I think he made it through one episode or something.
Oh,
thank you. He was like, it's too terrible for me.
Oh, were you guys offended that I posted up that what you guys consider gay porn or whatever on the chat?
Oh yeah.
Do you want me to explain?
I think we were just trolling you.
Do you want me to? I didn't know if you guys saw that video or not.
Oh, I eventually did end up watching it.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
So,
well, not listeners have to know, because they would be like, what is Dustin calling to the to the gay side? Is that the marriage he's talking about? He's gonna get gay married?
Okay. Well, not to name any names, just general titles of people. So the old guy in that video that you saw, and technically speaking, like, you, whoever in the chat, my brother and me are the only people that have seen this video. Well, other than
I got daft onto Buster Balls, but
oh yeah, I know he did. So, but I mean, that includes daft too. But so here's what happened. Like, I had to go out of town a couple weeks ago to go to my boss's brother's house, because he. He wound up passing away or dying in Mexico, like, the day we went to Charlotte for the Belk Bowl. And they had his funeral and all that. So, like, now, like, he's kind of the trustee of the estate for his family. So now it's his job to kind of sort through his brother's stuff. So we went up there, like, Tuesday, and my job was to video the house and make sure I got, like, a bunch of stuff photographed so we can kind of, like, you know, leave it up to the estate so people can kind of sift through it and see what they want inside the house. So the next day, we pick one of the empty vacant apartments that we wind up setting up as two of his office spaces in there. And they've got like, you know, these computers got like a ton of his like personal like files, like information on statements. So like he's supposed to be, my boss is supposed to be hiring somebody to go through his computers and kind of print everything out and kind of itemize everything and seeing like what business stuff he had set up. So I set up one of his, like, cause I think his main computer, and I'm just kind of digging through there just because, like, I don't know the password to get in the name, but what you do is you just go in as a user or as a guest, and then from there, from my computer, you select the user folder because that's not password protected in my computer. If you signed on another account, and you can kind of sift and see what they have on their account. And so that's when I saw, like, a few dick pics, a bad cell cam rip of a young guy sucking somebody's dick, and then that video. And the funny thing was, is the night before, we were having a, this, like, we're talking at the family, like, you know, like, the house and everything, and you were telling my brother, and my dad brings up, he's like, I think this guy was gay. And my brother's like, did you see in the house that would prove that he was gay? And I'm like, no, not really. They talked about this one guy that was staying there, and I don't know who he is. They never mentioned anything, and, you know, my boss was really, like, freaked out about it or whatever. And then, like, after seeing all the pieces and the stuff I saw on the computer, I was like, okay, this dude's gay. And I'm pretty sure the guy that was staying there is the guy that's, like, his boyfriend, boy toy or whatever. So, and I'm like, okay, that explains a lot. And, so then I just basically turned off the computer and then hooked up the monitor to the other one just to see if it'll run. And then I left it alone, and that's that. So, that's pretty much the story, John. And the thing is, I'm not telling my boss anything. I'm going to let him find that out on his own because that's family stuff. And as far as he knows, I don't know any of that stuff.
Do you think this is some folder that he's going to come across, or do you have to dig to find you? Was it just like right on the main page of his computer?
I don't. The thing is, like, I don't know if, like, if he knows the password to get on his brother's account, but like if you go through user and you go through my computer and then select the user folder, then, like, you basically can go into his brother's account of whatever he had on his user page and dig through there. So, like, you don't even really need to log in, per se. But, I mean, that's how I did it, because I was just like, well, let's just see what's on his site or whatever. And I was like, well, I got that answer, that question.
Yeah, I think CG is probably jealous of your job now. He's found a reason to get off of disability. Inspect the gay guys, the gay guys' computers for a living.
Oh my gosh! I hope my boss doesn't hire CG, and then you hear CG behind the computer just humming, like singing the Inspector Gadget thing, like high pitchy talks. Like
CG would just spend all day every day at work on Skype and get fired in a week.
Same I was reason, trying yeah. to find Digimon information on the schedules for Nickelodeon Nicktoons. It's gonna die there!
Yeah, same reason he got kicked out. Well, actually, he didn't get kicked out. College, he just dropped out, you know, because he was like,
he dropped it after a week.
Yeah. He's like, hey, you feel so lonely being in school for a couple hours a day, not on Skype.
I forgot how social networking works in IRL. Like, you go to college to meet people.
I mean, he's, like, always bored on there, so I don't know why he would want to be on there, you know? Like, whenever I get on there with him, he's just like, sigh, I'm bored.
I feel depressed.
And dot, dot, dot. And then he'll, like, start playing a video game, and he'll expect you to just sit there and listen to him. What? That's why I'm rarely on Skype. Because he'll always be like, hey, John, I want to chat.
I think I blocked him on Skype like a couple of years ago because I'm just like, I'm not putting up with this. Really? I think he got mad because he figured it out or something. I was like, oh, well, what do you do?
I remember he actually blocked me on Facebook and on Skype for a while after after that incident with Steve.
Yeah.
Where he, after the tweaker incident.
No, but then he forgot about it. That's the funny part.
Yeah, a few months later, he was like, hey, wait, why did I remove him? I forgot. And, like, he's better friends with Steve now than we are.
He still talks to Steve, and I'm just kind of like, oh, is he still mad about stupid stuff? Okay. I wonder, if Steve would listen to this and be like, those guys have gone off their alt-right rockers, waffles, and trying to not print, they're not disowning Trump, and they seem to be praising him, and, oh, glad I'm not talking to him anymore. I'm like, okay. the merrier.
Knowing him, he would probably be like, it's too bad we didn't elect the ghost of Richard Nixon. Oh, I remember he went on this big rant one time about how we need a new Nixon.
I think I remember that, but it's probably on a recording somewhere that I care not to ever go back.
I also remember the one time he started shouting out, "See Kyle!"
That was after we left. Yeah, that was after we left, and I was like, well, you do whatever you want, and that site is dead. And he did video podcast, and then I guess the people he wanted to have on, everyone must have lost interest or something, but that, yeah.
Yeah, Josh stuck around for a little while longer after us, but like
he didn't even want to stay on there. Like, he's just like, I'm trying to get on these like Google video things and it's not even working, but he's so adamant about making it work. And I'm just like, I don't have to deal with that crap anymore.
Yeah, I remember he made us go on Google Hangout for some reason, and it was like a total mess.
It was a mess. Google Hangout is trash. I don't know why he thought it was like the great, like, anyways.
Yeah. Every time we've tried to use it, like when we tried to do that card game on there.
That was super fun. I was like, well, maybe it's the only thing I know that we can use, and that didn't work, and I'm like, all right, we're just going to do an audio podcast and just save the cards that we got and take photos of it. And that seemed to work, kind of, so.
Yeah.
Other than that, the only thing is I had a birthday last week. I'm 31 years old and podcasting. So I've joined the old man's podcasting crowd that still podcasts in their 30s, like Dave and Joel from Fast Karate for the Gentlemen, and everyone on Anime World Order, and that's about it. Well, I think Paul Chapman from the Greatest Movie Ever is in his 30s or something. So, I've joined the 30 and Elites podcasting group since I'm old, but I don't know, that's all I wanted to say. Like, we wound up going to a Mexican restaurant and talking about wedding plans with my future mother-in-law and my fiance Dory. Well, we talked about future plans for a little bit, and then we just kind of like hung out and just ate more Mexican food. I had fun.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Oh man. I don't know. I can't. That was kind of like the highlights in the past couple weeks for me, was the things I mentioned. And I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it. You know, I was looking through some of the cloud tweets just now, and it seems that really most of his followers are really upset about this whole issue of the size of the crowd at the inauguration. I don't think we mentioned that.
Oh,
but I think it's a really silly controversy. Maybe the dumbest Trump controversy yet.
Like, the news wanted to magnify that so much and like, oh, look how empty it is. But it's like, you know, dude, it's like a lot of people outside of the country came to D.C. to see Trump. And it's still like a pretty good crowd. It's not like that terrible. They're like, oh, he didn't turn out numbers like Obama did. The thing is, people went to go see Obama because he was the first black president.
Yeah, and people are. No one really has an accurate number on how many people went.
Yeah, there's nothing that's shown up yet, but like it's still. I think they overplanned it, and I don't know like the seating was, or like if you had a reserve or whatever, but like I don't know, like
yeah.
I think that the closest to any statistics I've seen was something like 200,000 people went for Trump's, which is about the same amount that went to Bush's in 2004,
mm-hmm.
And then it was more like 500,000 for Obama, but it's not you know, this is based on like how many people rode the subway. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily indicative of the amount of people who actually showed up, because people came from around the country via car and stuff for Trump, whereas with Obama, I think it was mostly just locals in D.C. because
that would make sense.
D.C. is the vast majority Black Democrats who are excited about a Black Democrat being elected president, mm-hmm. whereas almost no one in D.C. voted for Trump, including probably most of the Republicans in Congress or whatever, but you know, there's you know, so many people that showed up that mm-hmm. You know, probably didn't come from DC that aren't being counted because they didn't go via the subway, and you know, they're just using like a statistic that isn't really all that meaningful.
Yeah,
and then they have some pictures that they say are like proof that nobody showed up, but it's like pictures that were taken the day before, or pictures that were taken that morning before he was out there.
I don't understand why, like, oh, no one showed up. I was like, I freaking saw it live, and there was a pretty good crowd out there.
Yeah, like they take like one out of context picture where there's some empty space, and it's like, yeah, but if you saw it on TV, it didn't look like that. So
yeah,
like what are they trying to pull here? And then apparently the press secretary went up there and was saying, well, a bunch of people watched it on the internet, and he was saying like, oh, it was probably the most viewed inauguration ever. And you know, if you look at the amount of people who are alive now versus when Obama was inaugurated, I think it's at least 1 billion more people. So it seems to me that it's very likely that probably more people did see this than the Obama inauguration, even though a bunch of people on Twitter are acting like, oh, we boycotted it, so that means nobody watched it and it didn't really happen. You know, like, they think that it matters whether or not they saw it, but it doesn't matter. And whether or not you watch it doesn't affect the fact that he's president.
But then, like, four blocks over, they're having the boycott thing, and where they freaking break down a bank window in a Starbucks area and then burn a limo, and it's just like, okay, well, DC's on fire again, or for the first time, and it's so freaking stupid.
Yeah, yeah, and there was that case in LA where somebody got shot because they thought they were a Trump supporter, but it turned out they were a Bernie supporter.
Oh my
God. And it was just like somebody being racially profiled based on the fact that they were white or something. And so mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's just stupid, you know. And there are half of the tweets that he's posted are extremely racist, where it's people saying, this is all white women's fault because the majority of white women voted for Trump after all this stuff about how they were all going to go for Hillary because she's a white woman. And then, you know, it turns out Trump won white men and white women. And did much better with every group than they expected, and now people are lashing out. They're like, well, look, 94% of black women voted against Trump, so black women are good and white women are evil. And, you know, there's like white women at these protests, and there's like a black woman standing in front of them with a sign saying, white women voted for Trump, they're evil. And it's like, you're really making a collective judgment of an entire race of people based on like 52% of them voting for one candidate that you didn't like. You know, obviously the people who are out there marching against him did not vote for him. You know, how stupid do you have to be attacking the people who are out there marching with you based on their race, and to be shooting them, and to be, you know, attacking random stores.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is just, they think this is going to stop him when they go out there and act like barbarians. All they're doing is helping him because they're making their side look stupid. And It's just amazing how everything they do totally backfires, and they don't know how to do anything right. the concept that they're going to be out there for 100 days doing this. I mean, Trump must be praying that, that these people stay out there and keep misbehaving so that they make their side look bad, you know? They're not doing themselves any favors with some of this stuff.
Yeah, they're trying so hard to look good and righteous, but it just keeps backfiring on them, and it's just gets dumber and dumber every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're in for 4 or 8 years is incoherent screaming about the fact that he's president and people who just can't accept the reality of what's going on and, yeah, and think that their opinions have any effect on the world.
Yep. Narcissism at work.
Yeah. I mean, this is what happens when you create a Twitter echo chamber where everyone you know agrees with you. You get totally taken aback when it turns out that people who, from the outside world don't all have the exact same opinions and race and views as you do.
It's a bubble they created around themselves, and then with Trump being in office, it's like a huge threat. If not, the threat has happened where the bubble burst it, and they don't know how to react to it. They don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So all they know how to do is act like freaking 5-year-olds and cry and scream until they get their way, until things are, quote, fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really incredible what social media has done to people. It's so many people are living in this fantasy world where, you know, they have like a safe space. So, you know, so many of them are like blocked whenever anyone gives any challenging opinion to them. Like, or I see that like, all the time.
When I tell people on Twitter that like, it's not Die Buster, but Gun Buster 2, True Facts. And they get all pissy and then block me. And they're like, oh, I did such a righteous thing. We pissed off an anime podcast. It's like, you freaking blocked me. Because I told you it's Gun Buster 2 as a joke. And you can't joke on the internet. I keep forgetting that point.
Yeah, they were like, why would you associate it with Gunbuster if you like Gunbuster, not Gunbuster 2?
And then I find a New Type USA issue that's got Gunbuster 2 on the front cover, officially printed by ADV. That means, in print, it is a factual statement that it is Gunbuster 2. And I stand by that.
Yeah.
So, suck it.
So much for the so-called contract with Tune Radio, where they were like, you can't feud with anybody on Twitter anymore.
Well, this was back in the summer, so like haven't been doing that on our Twitter page much. So I've been good. I'm trying not to be the Donald Trump of our Twitter page. Like, Ian Inkesk, that Zach needs to go. Go to China. He's very lousy podcast. He doesn't know what he's talking about. # AnnCast sucks. There, I said it.
It sounds more like the Saturday Night Live Trump than the real Trump.
I know, that's why it's so much easier to associate with Saturday Night Trump. Because Alec Baldwin does such a good, like, I know, like, Trump, the positive thing about Trump being in office is all the like skits we're going to see of them making fun of Trump.
And his responses are funny too.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's going to be so entertaining for the next 4 years.
Maybe I actually saw Yash post on Facebook saying, and this is one thing I agree with him about Trump. Trump watches Saturday Night Live just to hate on it and say how much it used to be better. So he's just like every other Saturday Night Live fan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what everybody says about Saturday Night Live. But people make fun of Trump for saying that.
I'm just waiting for That's My Trump, a.k.a. the That's My Bush Season 2. I still need to watch That's My Bush.
Oh, you've never seen it?
I haven't seen it yet. I need to check see if my spleen has a rip of it so I can download it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's aged well. I mean, I saw it during the Bush administration, so it seemed very
I didn't know about it until years later. But, like, it would be perfect to bring that back on Comedy Central.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah, I know that with the original plan for that show was they were going to make it about Al Gore.
And then they found out that Bush won. They're like, holy crap, we got to change this up.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it turned out a lot better because Al Gore is not very funny. You know, he's a very droll.
Yeah. Global warming is really hilarious. I invented the internet. Global warming. Well, you see. God, that guy was so boring. Al Gore, that was a dick. It's a joke. I just like, people were so like, yeah, Gore's going to totally beat Bush. And I'm like, how? Like, what's there? You can't. But then it was like, as soon as it was like, you know, McCain and Obama, I was like, oh, there's no hope. And, I mean, Romney did better, much better than McCain, I thought, but it still wasn't any hope.
Well, there is a winner here, and that's Donald Trump.
Yeah. So.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they say they're going to be out there 100 days. I feel like there's some northeasterner storm blowing into New York, you know. That's going to hit them, and then they're going to all go home. And they're not going to come back out.
Yeah, they're not going to stomach the rain and be like, we'll be back, Mother Nature. Donald Trump caused the Northeastern to rain on us. We're not going to let that happen, but we are going to go home for the next couple of days. But then we'll be back. This 100-day thing hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah, I mean, look at how long Occupy lasted. You know, they lost them cleared out when it got cold for the winter, and this one's starting in January, so they didn't have to wait very long.
Why did they do this during, like, the summer or warmer seasons or drier seasons? They had to pick freaking winter to do, like, the 100 days of disruption. And I'm just like, we'll see how this goes. And they all think, like, everything can be solved. Like, if we tweet enough, it's totally going to make a difference. And, like, social media means nothing. Like, they make such a big deal about the stupid hashtag, I'm sorry, pound sign, on putting, like, stuff with it. Like, it's gonna make that big of a difference. Like, no, it's just a variable and, like, digits and information on a screen. You have to, like, actually put yourself out there. And most of them won't do it, except, like, maybe a day or so. And scream and holler and lose a voice, and anyways.
I mean, there are a handful of these people who maybe actually voted, like, you know, CG, he had to ask, this is funny, Viku said that he was on a call with CG and Yash, and CG was asking Yash, how do I vote? And he was, like, having to have it explained to him, like, how to fill in some bubbles on the ballot, and the fact that he has to bring an ID, and that sort of stuff. Although, I don't know, maybe he doesn't have to bring an ID in Pennsylvania, but yeah, he was like completely unaware of this, even though, I mean, he's older than I am. He probably could have voted in 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014, and I guess he was just never scared enough until now because, you know, I guess there was no gay marriage yet when, the previous presidential election happened, so he was like, not motivated enough to go out and vote, but there was so much fear-mongering done this year about Trump is going to reverse gay marriage, even though he's said that he considers it to be the law of the land, and
yeah,
that he's not going to do anything about it, and and so I guess he really got spooked by that stuff because if he spends all his time on social media where there's tons of scaremongering over that kind of thing. And it's just like, he lives in as much of a bubble as it is possible for a human being to live in a bubble.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he spends all his time looking at like, at schedules and, and like, fretting over whether or not.
Nickelodeon schedules for Digimon, and then like saying, yeah, if it doesn't air 1 week, that's it, it's the end.
Yeah,
and it's just.
And he said he doesn't even get cable in his new place, so why does he care so much? And I don't think he watches the dubs anyway because he's a Japanese purist. So what does it matter so much to him?
All right, man. We need to shut this down. I need to go to bed.
Okay. Yeah. So, what's our next recording going to be? If we want to give people a little teaser.
Man, you know what? We need to record, like, we need to watch, like, a dumb OVA or from YouTube and talk about that. We haven't done that in a while.
Yes.
I've got a number of stuff we can start watching.
You had me download something, High School Agent M74, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah! High School, like, it was, like, High School Agent or something, like, that had a fan sub with it. I think it was done by the guys who did, it's done by King Menu, I think. And then, like, there's some, like, motorcycle anime. Yeah, we need to get back into doing stuff like that. It's been, like, we always have to plan. But, like, the Gundam stuff has always been, like, the huge thing. It's like, oh, crap. It's just, it's overbearing kind of thing. But now that we got that out of the way, it's like, oh, okay, now we can kind of talk about whatever.
Or we can just do, like, watch the first episode of some of these other shows and just give, like, a vague impression. Like the Tezuka one with the lion stuff.
Okay, Leon the Lion. I've got Galaxy Angel, which I remember seeing ads for that in New Type USA. Let's see what we got here. Leon the Lion.
There's one about baseball. There was like a romantic comedy.
Yeah. I've got Assemble Insert, some of the stuff I picked up. Oh, the cool thing about Myrtle Beach is that I ran across a movie shop that you could still rent stuff there, but then also you can buy things from there. And I walked in there, and basically the guy that ran the store was like, if Randall from Clerks had like a mohawk that was multicolored, and sat behind the counter and watched Sailor Moon. Because that's exactly what this guy did. And he was like freaking awesome. And then like the episode when this big fat cat tries to save and be like a hero for Luna, like that was the next one that played because he had the Viz DVD or the Blu-rays that came out. And I was just like, hey, dude, keep watching. And we just started laughing at how ridiculous that episode is. And that happens to be one of my favorite episodes from that first season. Like, if I have to give credit to Sailor Moon, it's the filler episodes that they're just like, all right, just F it. Throw everything to the wall and let's just make fun of stuff. And that
that's probably
like,
why people dislike Sailor Moon Crystal so much is because it doesn't have any of that sort of fun, crazy stuff.
I could definitely see that.
Plot only.
Yeah. I've also got the Dangard Ace, the movie collection that came from Shout Factory. I've got that on DVD. Oh. We can watch some old Super Robot stuff.
Yeah, or we could, I mean, there's so many OVAs out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like Dangayo. Have you seen that one?
I've seen the first Dangayo. That's something we can definitely tackle. So now it's like a light plate. We don't have like a lot of heavy stuff, and that's good.
And we still have that Super Gals thing that we never got around to.
Oh, shut up, John. We will tackle that in due time. Same with
Kimberly. Oh, we will? Do we have to?
Yeah, no.
I guess we shouldn't get horse in the mouth.
Shoot, I'm not going to punch. I'm going to full deck cross hook the gift horse. And then hopefully revive it and be like, hey, give us some more Gundam. No offense to Right Stuff. They're cool. All right, we'll worry about Super Gals later. I mean, in a way, I'm kind of interested, but I don't know. But my thought was we need to start watching stuff or plan out what we're going to see for the next Takahashi versus Tomino episode. I was thinking Panzer World Galliant. And, oh, I've got, there's one that Tomino did do. It's an OVA. Did come out in America because I have it on DVD. It's called Z-Mind.
Never heard of it.
Let me check. Let me confirm that it is from, I'm pretty sure it did come from, I'm pretty sure, like, Tomino worked on this. But I've had it for a couple of years, because I got it at a pawn shop, like in Lejeune or something, and I heard about it. So then I wound up just getting it. But, like, that's another Yeah, that's something else we can definitely check out. It's 6 episodes. So it's like a all-girls super robot show kind of thing, but it's an OVA. Looks pretty cool. Sound director, producer... Oh, no, it came from Yasuhiro Matsumura. So it's not a Timina show, so we can't review Z-Mind for that. Dadgummit. We'll figure something out. It's the start of a new year. New opportunity. We can always watch the Yamato movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, John, I got a good one on VHS. Bite Me Chameleon.
What is that?
It's something. Okay. I got it on a VHS from my buddy Josh years ago, and my brother and I saw it. It's like Japanese high school gang thugs thing, but it's a comedy. It's but Bite Me Chameleon was like this big Takubon I found it when I was in Japan at like a guest or like a shop, and I bought that whole thing, and it should be sitting on my shelf. If not, it's probably in storage. But no, it's definitely part of a series, and ADV only subtitled the first episode and realized that nobody liked it or wanted it, and they never continued it. So it's up to the fansubbers to continue Bite Me Chameleon. But that is something we can definitely check out. It's one of those gag comedy things, and it's so stupid and juvenile. It's, like I said, it's something. And it's sitting on my shelf.
I remember there was an OVA that I saw that I rented a couple of years ago. That was a comedy OVA called The Samurai that was really crazy and funny thing we could probably review sometime. I think it's only like a half hour or something.
Okay.
And I actually ended up buying it when...
Is that when Bookman's went out of business?
Well, not Bookman's, but the Paradise Video that I used to rent stuff at. I don't really know how to stream stuff. I guess I should figure out how. But it's probably available online somewhere.
I'm sure I can find it, yeah. You know, I like to do a proper review of Soul Bianca.
It's true. I've never actually seen that. I've only seen Soul Bianca, the whatever that one
called,
Soul Bianca Legacy.
Yeah, I've got all the DVDs for that. Another idea, John, we need to get Sean Ryan back on to talk about Guyver 2.
That's been like
It's been 2 years, yeah. It's high time we need to bring him back on and get him out of retirement and do that. So he's got a baby now, and I don't know how free his podcasting schedule is, but hopefully I can work something out. Talk about Guyver 2.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff we can talk about.
Oh, yeah. So
you ever seen the Guyver OVAs?
We only reviewed that Out of Control, but I've got one of the discs to the Manga Entertainment Guyver OVAs that they put out. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at one of them.
Very classic.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out. That's sitting on my shelf.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that we've got plenty of stuff for many years to come. Just mentioned on this episode.
I've got something called Guardian of Darkness by U.S. Manga. I think that's a Masami Obari. I don't know. We've also got Giant Robo. We've got Galforce. I've been wanting to actually get Gerald Rathcoll back on to talk about Galforce, since that's like his favorite thing. I've got two of the Galaxy Express movies. It's a never-ending list, John.
Speaking of Obari, Virus Buster Surge over the weekend.
I never finished that show because like it was on Sci-Fi and I only saw a couple of episodes of it. And then,
it was
like,
a kiss for me too until recently.
Yeah, it was on Anna Monday, but I think that's part of the time like when I was in that transition where my parents moved here and I was still up in Raleigh, so I didn't have cable for a while.
Yeah, it didn't really make much sense to me.
Well, that's flattering to know.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I guess it delivered on having lots of women with large breasts, which is Obari's specialty.
Yeah. I gotta go to bed, man, so I'm gonna let you go. We'll get this out, and then we'll go.
Yeah.
today as someone who carries within him the true aspirations of Sion.
I've gathered a loyal following, listen to my philosophy, I just wanna live cosmically. New type of psychology, I'm a prodigy, but listen, if you bother me, I'ma start dropping colonies. Pay attention to purpose for which I lobby is evolution of body. Eliminate every zombie in the name of Daikun. The legacy I embody, that's why I zoom. Confetti space in the rest of lobby. Rebel state of mind, I'm not afraid to speak on. That's why I'm not the opponent you wanna sleep on. I'm still yelling out, Six Dion. Competition ain't on the level that we on. We kick knowledge, something like Red Comet. To the label bosses, pay us nothing except homage. I ain't trying to brag, I'm just trying to be honest. Every mobile suit I had, I kept that paint job flawless. It feels good to be a space lord. I said it feels good to be a space lord.